Tuesday on the Horn. A minute past the hour, we begin this evening's program. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is Conversation Radio, whose home is, of course, headonradionetwork.com. Also available places like iTunes Radio, iTunes Podcasting, White Rose Society, Stitcher Radio, and TuneIn Radio as well. So there are a multiplicity of ways of getting the program. You choose what works best for you. Well, just a couple of programs left before 2011 shuffles off to its long home and its anticipated reward, right? Someday I'd love to see a model of the universe. Solar system within the galaxy. And just if somebody at NASA Labs could just work this up for me, please. I'd like to see what it means, where we are. If we can figure out where we are relative to anything else, I'd like to see how much we move from year to year to year. Or how much the Earth does relative to the solar system relative to our little backwater of the galaxy. You do realize we sort of live in the low-rent district of the Milky Way, right? Yeah, we're not exactly... No, we're not there at Galactic Center. We're out past the tracks. But it would be fascinating to see it, because, and then plot, where was the Earth in, say, 1066? So that maybe we could sort of visualize the fact that there's really no such thing as a new year. That every moment on this planet is new. Oh, dear. I'm waxing philosophical, and we're not 3 minutes into the program. I promise I'll stop. I want to share some magnificently wonderful good news with you. It was stunning what I saw happen last night. You know, during the program, we asked for folks to meet John's challenge, John's $100 challenge, and you did, and then some. And then after the show was over, and having nothing to do whatsoever with me, but rather with the dedication of some longtime Horn listeners and new folks as well, I began to see this flurry of contributions come in. And you know how we closed the program last night and I said we needed 78 folks to step up and kick into the Thrifty 250? Yeah, basically, we were $780 away. Well, as of now, right now, as a result of the dedication and determination of a handful of folks, Tim from L.A. was part of it, Sparky was part of it. I think it took place in the Horns post-Malloy Skype chat, among other things. But the upshot is, and this will warm the cockles of Kate's heart. One of these days I'm going to find out what a cockle is. If you can sell them with muscles, I don't know what they're doing near your heart. But no, this will warm Kate on the Front Range where there is no snow. This will warm the cockles of her heart, because we closed the program last night looking for an improbable 78 folks to fill 78 slots in the Thrifty 250. And I can sit here this evening with fully two shows yet remaining in the month of December. I can sit here and I can tell you that all we need to finish December in the good, and we didn't do it with November and we didn't do it with October, but all as a result of that amazing effort last night, all we need to finish December in the good is 22 people. 22 people, $10 apiece, $220, and December is done. If it happened tonight, it wouldn't... Wow, I don't know how long it's been a while since that happened, that we finished before the month was out. But isn't that amazing? Isn't that stunning? Isn't that just an absolutely inspiring picture of the determination that people have to have media that means something to them and to which they can feel some degree of attachment and from which they can expect some degree of at least a commonality of viewpoint, that something like that would happen last night. It's absolutely, absolutely magnificent. And of course, great thanks go out, as ever, to our dear friend Mike Malloy. He has spoken kindly and effusively, not just of this program, but of Cold River Mountain Watch. And it is, thrilling. In a sort of, not thrilling like watching a car race thrilling, but thrilling to see the determination of people to push back against BS media, the for-profit media, the 1% media, to have a haven of candor and honesty, and yeah, a little fun and carrying on too, daggummit. So thanks to you all. I tried to write, and I've still got a couple left to do. I tried to write thank you notes for every contribution that came in, and the ones I didn't get to, I think there might be two, maybe three, that happened today while I was out and about. I will get to after the show. Thank you very kindly on behalf of all the volunteers who make the horn go. Thank you. But, you know, in the stack this evening, there's a story that's illustrative, if you will, of the difference between the for-profit media and those of us who, what Shakespeare say, warriors for the working day. And it's this. You know, there's been that cranky old freak Ron Paul.
I don't want to go to his bathroom. You have to boil the gay's AIDS laundry for at least 15 minutes before you can make sure you won't catch the homo.
Really? He said it. Put his name to it. He's out in Iowa. He thinks he's got a shot at Romney. And nobody's told him yet that he's not going to be president. Ron, Dr. Ron, you're not going to be president.
What am I going to be?
Well, we're going to go to a farm, Ron. You'll have lots of room to run around, Ron.
Will there be queers there?
Oh, there won't be any queers there, Ron. It'll be nice, wide open spaces.
Real property?
You betcha, Ron. Lots of wide open.
Tell me about the rabbits.
But anyway, so he's stumping all over Iowa, probably some other things too. And he says, he shows up. Where was it? A rally with veterans, last night. And all of a sudden, some Occupy folks, well, since the for-profit 1% media weren't doing their job, Occupy decided to do its. This is from Des Moines, Iowa.
...abilities are at the federal level. The federal level, the defense is a vital function of the government.
Do you hear the little Ronulans?
Ron Paul, Ron Paul, Ron Paul, Ron Paul, Ron Paul.
Now, why did the little Ronulans do that? The little Ronulans did that because one human being who decided to occupy the Des Moines appearance of the man who doesn't want to use gay bathrooms, of the man who thinks that AIDS patients enjoy the pity that they get. Jesus, God, it gives me the shivers every time I think of it. What kind of sick, not fit for social interaction person would say something like that? But he did. He put his name to it. It went out all over the country with his, "Hi, this is the Ron Paul Survival Report." Yeah. There's even a Twitter stream now you might find interesting if you're into the tweeting. There's a Twitter stream out there called RP_newsletter. And just like that guy who's out there, or woman, I don't know, who is out there tweeting every last line of every Shakespeare play 140 characters at a time, well, someone else has decided to excerpt Ron Paul. RP_newsletter. Let's see. Here's a real hit. Addressing himself to the Reverend Al Sharpton. "But Al, the Statue of Liberty? Next time, hold that demonstration at a food stamp bureau or a crack house." I hate to agree with the Reverend Al, but maybe a name change is in order. Welfaria? Zooville? Rape Town? Dirtburg? Lazyopolis? "I fear there will be welfare riots.
I fear there will be welfare riots in the big cities, Jiminy Jigby G." When did free Americans ever let the peak of moral pygmies stop them?
RP_newsletter has been busy. But anyway. It was kind of inspiring. An individual stood up in Des Moines, Iowa, at a veterans rally and asked a very simple question. And that question, of course, was, "Why do you hate gays?" Simple question. Probably has a complex answer if he would bother to answer it. Of course he didn't. If we continued with the clip, you would hear him say, "Ha ha, freedom of speech, ain't it wonderful?" Really? Now, he has worked hard to get his little Ronulans into the 99% movement, into the Occupy movement. He's been friendly toward it. But when it comes out that a person is as sickening a bigot.
"Yeah, they were doing queer stuff in there. It's just a bunch of queer stuff."
As Ron Paul is. Then it becomes incumbent upon us to do the jobs that the for-profit 1% media will not do. And while Gloria Borger, for instance, at CNN, at least asked him about the newsletters, she didn't ask him outright, "What's your problem with gay people?" But at that meeting, at that rally or campaign event in Des Moines, Iowa last night, one woman did. "Why do you hate gays?" Another asked, "Why Ron Paul desires to repeal Roe versus Wade," or not repeal, it's not a law, but to overturn Roe versus Wade and, quote-unquote, control a woman's reproductive decisions.
"Huh, freedom of speech. Ain't it wonderful? I just love it when the little women's get their backs up. Isn't it cute?"
So when the for-profit 1% media will not do its job, it falls to us to do it.
Every home should be dedicated to Western standards of religion, music, values, dress, and manners. And the sexual ethics of our youth are also degenerating to the level of the ghetto. And the music they listen to, which is a thumping beat once heard on safari. Just look at the clothing young people wear today. Baggy jeans, backwards hats, high-top sneakers. The youth culture is already driven by ghetto music and ghetto values, but whites are not allowed to express this same human impulse. Blacks have black schools, clubs, and neighborhoods. The same is true of Hispanics. It's human nature that like attracts like. The whites don't vote for candidates that promise to promote white interests, whereas blacks and Hispanics do.
And again, I simply remind you that there are a handful of, no, not a handful, that there are probably in excess of a couple of million people in this country. Oh, Marvelline! Funny. Emery sounds a lot like Ron Paul, doesn't he? Well, they've got a commonality of interest. Marvelline, come here. That Ron Paul, he's a talking sense again. Mother McCree. And there's so much other stuff out there. Now, this is not going to be a Ron Paul show. It's Thorn in the Side Thursday, however. And God, ain't he? I mean, just isn't he? I mean, one of those great big locust tree thorns. Never forget the first time as a child I decided to shinny up the locust tree. I didn't shinny much. I wailed and screamed some, though, and caterwauled. There's a few million people in this country who think that that's talking sense. I mean, my God, what is it? There's sort of a follow-up post in the New York Times today on its op-ed page by James Kirchick. And James Kirchick is the person who did the original New Republic article that sort of outed Ron Paul low those many years ago. But apparently James Kirchick didn't include everything he had. Because there's some genuine weird in this opinion piece at the New York Times. James Kirchick writing, in a 1990 C-SPAN appearance taped between congressional stints, Paul was asked by a caller to comment on the treasonous Marxist alcoholic dictators that pull the strings in our country. And rather than roll his eyes, Ron Paul responded, "Yeah, there's pretty good evidence that those who are involved in the Trilateral Commission and the Council on Foreign Relations usually end up in positions of power, and I believe this is true." Mr. Kirchick continues, Paul then went on to stress the negligible differences between various Rockefeller trilateralists. The notion that these three specific groups, the Trilateral Commission, the Council on Foreign Relations, and the Rockefeller family, run the world has been at the center of far-right conspiracy theorizing for a long time. Long, long time. Promoted especially by the extremist John Birch Society, whose 50th anniversary gala dinner Ron Paul keynoted in 2008. You know, it's kind of like when we found out that Godzilla from Wasilla was a real-life secessionist and that she and her pad had been active in the Alaska Independence Freedom Bull Moose Party or what the hell ever. It's just, even though they're weirdos, it's still kind of hard to realize, tough to realize. Ron Paul, according to James Kirchick, told the New York Times Magazine in 2007, "I have a lot of friends in the John Birch Society. They're generally well-educated, and they
understand the Constitution.
Yeah.
But see, you've got to understand that there is a subtext that runs underneath Ron Paul. Whenever he gets going real good about globalists and the Rockefellers and the Trilateral Commission and the World Bank and Rothschilds and mommy. And that undercurrent is a really smelly, vile form of anti-Semitism. Because once you get going on the World Bank and the Trilateral Commission and the Council on Foreign Nations and the Bohemian Grove, then it's not long before you're hollering about Jew bankers. And I wouldn't be surprised that Lou Rockwell and Ron Paul and the rest of the Von Mises Institute, that when they get where they pretty sure they can't be heard, they do talk about the Jew bankers. But Ron Paul is just there's a reason that he shows up on things like Alex Jones. Because Ron Paul is a grand schemer. He believes in grand schemes. I'm not going to use the word conspiracy, because there are real conspiracies out there. They happen every day. For instance, what Andy was talking about last night with MF Global and a couple of $1 billion suddenly just going missing. Went walkabout. Well, that involved a conspiracy. But that's not what Ron Paul is into, in addition to the Trilateral Commission and Rockefeller. Don't forget the Illuminati and the Rosicrucians, you're probably in there too, and the Jew bankers. He's a big NAFTA superhighway guy. And they're trying to create an integrated North American Union. He was asked, please don't call me about 9/11. Just please, for the love of Jesus, don't call me about 9/11. But he was asked about September 11th, 2001. I don't know. Do we dare? Yeah, why not? This is Ron Paul being asked about 9/11. Not to say that there wasn't something hinky going on, but... well, just listen. Now, I know that's really noisy audio, and I apologize, but you heard the question. One last question. Why won't you come out about the truth about 9/11? See, that's what bugs me about 9/11. Is we're always talking about the truth about 9/11 and not so much about the facts. Truth is malleable. Truth is subjective. Truth is what you want it to be. The facts are different animals. Why don't you come out about the truth about 9/11? Now, you got to... hopefully, it will be clear enough that you will hear this answer because it's breathtaking.
Because I can't handle the controversy. I have the IIF, the Federal Reserve, to deal with. This could be a risk. Because, I just have more... too many things on my plate. I just have too much time.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, that comes to you courtesy of InfoWars. that video, InfoWars. You know who that is, right? Yeah. Alex Jones. So, rather than giving some sort of a nuanced answer, like, you know, I wish we could have a real investigation that didn't involve George Bush sitting on Dick Cheney's lap, unsworn, just sort of babbling away, or maybe to say that oaths would be good, oaths to tell the truth would be good things, or to say that we really haven't gotten to the bottom of the short sales that in the airlines that preceded the event. None of that. No, his answer.
Well, you know, it's because I can't handle the controversy. I have the IMF, the Federal Reserve to deal with, the IRS to deal with. No, because I just have more, too many things on my plate. Because I just have too much to do.
Yeah. So, there you have it. Ron Paul, in a nutcase, I mean nutshell. And again, I'm glad this is happening. It is important that this is happening. Because it's about damn time. That he was exposed for the poisonous fraud that he is. Because he is one. Jim writing in, noting, the AIDS virus cannot survive more than 20 seconds outside its host. And this was spoken by an MD? Yes, Jim, that was spoken by an MD. I mean, just ask one of the Romulans. Oh, Ron Paul's delivered a million babies! They'll tell you. He's a doctor. Most of this is stealth. I don't think Ron Paul is kidding himself and thinking he's going to be president. But he sure would like for the little boy he named after Ayn Rand to be president. But yeah, that was spoken by an MD.
You need to boil your linens for at least 15 minutes if a homo AIDS victim's touched them. And don't forget the bleach. Maybe a little lye soap.
Stunning, isn't it, Jim? Stunning, isn't it, Horn family, everyone? And by the way, we gotta get an early... David in Tennessee reminding me, we've got to get an early toaster out to Jim. Jim's been collecting toasters lately. He said days ago... That's the subject line. Days ago. Hell, it may have been a week ago. David says, the Horn's very own Jim dropped the Ron and Bruno winner days ago. Maybe a week. It took even the inestimable crooks and liars until today to post the video of the Ron and Bruno experience. Says David in Tennessee, Jim is the point of the spear. And it's true. Andy writing in last night saying that he's heard that more and more he's hearing the Ron Paul is like a stopped clock. He's right twice a day. More and more he's hearing that out there. But lo and behold, he heard it first coming from the mouth of the sage of Southwest Wisconsin, our buddy brother Albert. Listen, this is the Horn, and we're going to toot it. Because it makes me proud. This is not about me. This is about you. And you guys are so far out ahead of the curve that the rest of the world thinks they're on straight road. This little itsy-bitsy radio show is generally way the hell out in front, waiting for the for-profit media to catch up. And that's not about me. That is about you. And danged if it is not some kind of inspiring. By the way, thank you very, very kindly. We just went from 22 to, we need 17 now folks kicking into the, Thrifty 250 to get us to the end of December. It can happen. Thank you very, very much. You know who you are. If I can say who has started this ball rolling this evening, do please give me permission. We have tons and tons of stuff in the stack, and you know, I got one note in one of the contributions that came along last night saying, please focus. Please pull your focus back from the clown car race and focus on the Senate. I read that last night. And it's another one of those examples. I read that last night, and then lo and behold, today, over at Crooks and Liars, which is one of my very favorite sites, I see a post from one of the very best progressive bloggers on the planet, Carolee. Awesome bloggers over at Crooks and Liars, whether it's Carolee or Susie Madrack. But Carolee posted a piece at 2 o'clock today, fully 14 hours after I got the email from a contributor saying, will you please focus on the Senate race? And the headline is, Election 2012, Senate at risk of flipping to GOP. We were talking about this how many days ago? A week ago? Carolee writing and echoing, I'm not saying anybody's listening. No, there are themes out there that emerge and become blossoms in the consciousness, I guess you would say. But Carolee writes, similar to something that I said last night, she said, I confess to a short happy dance when I heard Senator Ben Nelson was retiring. Like everyone else, I'm sick and tired of his obstruction, his blue dogginess, and the way he plays his hand at the end like a smug cheater. But Lawrence O'Donnell pointed this out. He still voted with the Democrats 82% of the time. Just like I pointed out that, yes, in fact, he counted as one of those who counted toward the Democratic majority in the Senate. The good news about his retirement is that we won't have Ben Nelson to tear out our hair over anymore. The bad news is that his seat will likely flip to a Republican, and an ultra-conservative Republican at that. Nebraska, like Kansas, is chock full of Tea Party types, teabaggers, who will gladly have a candidate at hand to carry out their wishes. And Carolee points out, as unbelievable as it sounds, with the current craziness in Congress, Republicans could end up in the majority in the Senate. With Mitch McConnell taking over as Senate Majority Leader, they only need to win 4 seats and hold on to the ones they already have in order to do it. Does that give you the turtle squirts? Because it does me. I mean, you think it's off to the races zany right now with just the House? Wait till they're playing. Battling crazy, volleying weirdness back and forth between the two houses of the Congress and seeing just what kind of big plop they can land onto the president's desk. Oh, you just wait and see. Stay home. Don't vote. Don't vote. Because, well, you know, that's going to be fun to watch, isn't it? Oh, by God, it's not. If you've got a Senate race that you can get involved in wherever you are, you might want to get involved in it. I don't care how. Phone bank, put a sign in your yard, whatever's possible. Meanwhile, will there be, is there even, I was told by a couple of folks that there are some progressives in Nebraska, but have they got the stroke to put up against a well-funded teabagger who thinks that people who collect welfare are, in his words, coons. And I think I'm the only one who's been mentioning that, but it's worth hammering on, kind of the way that we've hammered for years on freaky old Ron Paul, and now the rest of the world's catching up. That man said that if you collect welfare, you're a coon. Right? Yeah, okay. So, out ahead of the curve. That's us. Let's see what's shaking on the phone lines. Hey, welcome to the program. Anybody there?
Hello?
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 Can you hear me?
I do.
Oh, okay, it's Sandra.
Oh, hey, Sandra.
I had a phone anyway. The Senate race is, you know, it's pretty important, but I don't really know, you know, as the way the Democratic Party is behaving, I don't really see how they're going to keep it, because I think there's like, what, 20 seats up on the Democratic side and only 10 or something on a Republican or something. I mean,
I saw a graphic where the number who were just outright quitting was at 7.
Okay, well, but the numbers, it's just, I got the impression the numbers is just not in the, you know, it's not up. The Democrats are in a really bad problem with just the numbers, the races they need to fight. And I think, did you see that article I sent you? I copied and pasted for you about Obama?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I tied in with that because I thought it was interesting, that article, because it talks about how detached he is. And, of course, his people are spinning it as, well, he needs to run against Congress, too. But, see, this is a problem for the Democrats, because if they have some sort of commander-in-chief president who isn't operating under all the hats that a president is supposed to wear, and one of them being the chief cheerleader for the Democratic Party, if he don't glad hand and work with, you know, the own members of his own party, there's no coattails. You see, so they can't rely on any help from him. If, you know what I mean? His governing style is really, I don't know, I was kind of taken aback by that article, because I'm like, wow, okay, is that, you know, I mean, well, who's running this country if all that dude is doing is watching sports events?
Because it all centers around, I just called Reggie, Mr. Obama said. It was his first domestic trip without Reggie Love, the former Duke University basketball player who had been his constant companion and presidential body man till he left in November. And of course, the article pointing out that he didn't spend his time schmoozing with Washington politicians. There's a very political aspect to being an incumbent president, Sandra, you know as well as I, that has as much to do with one's own party as one's own political success, and the two are often frequently intertwined, are they not?
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, there is something to be said for his association with the Congress that has a 93 on up disapproval rating. I understand the strategy there, but I do think that this administration is too clever by half. They seem to be very smug in a sort of Jimmy Carter administration type of way, if I may go there. And it's just not... It's disturbing because, you know, Eric Holder is coming out all of a sudden concerned about these voter suppression tactics. It's like, where you been, bitch? You know what I'm saying? It's like, it is all really a bit late. You know, if I was the Obama administration, I would have been all over doing anything I possibly could with my executive branch to stem those horrific changes in the voter law. Because I don't know if they think they're bulletproof or what, but if people can't vote for your ass,
you're in trouble.
You know, and I'm just thinking, just practically speaking, it's like most times politicians, you know, will act when their own survival is at stake. You can always rely on that. And well, this even seems to be eluding this fool.
Well, you know, Holder is out there all of a sudden with the action in South Carolina and so forth. But the thing is, the other side is getting a hold of the issue as well. I don't know if you saw it, but Willard Romney said, well, you know what, I don't know
I don't know why that Eric Holder is doing what he is. What's wrong with America where there's something evil about having to show a picture ID to vote?
Yeah, well, no, but see, they're once again playing on the stupidity of Americans overall, you know, because all people are like, oh, yeah, everyone should have an ID. You know, they don't, Americans, there's no critical thinking, so, you know, the Republicans can always rely on that because everything sounds reasonable put, you know, the way they frame it. You have to kind of give it some thought to understand what it means to be forced to pay to vote, because that's what, you know, all this sort of suppression is pointing to, not only with the ID, but they also are curtailing early voting. They're eliminating where people can go and vote in low-income areas. I mean, there's a whole battery of things that are going on, which, you know, is, you know, setting us back probably more than a half a century on access to the franchise. And it's just kind of like...
Oh, you know, there's the 93-year-old woman in Tennessee.
Yeah, right.
Who is going to have to shell out $200 or more to get a picture ID so she can vote. And she's been voting basically ever since they allowed her to.
Well, and I thought it was interesting. I heard today that in Iowa, those caucuses, those people who are running their election, the Republicans, oh, they're not requiring anybody to have ID for that.
No, I saw Brad Friedman point that out a couple of nights ago. No, there's no photo. There's no photo ID required if you want to go to the Republican caucus in Iowa.
Right. So that means that their only motivation in doing this is to suppress voting. There is no fraud, and everyone knows there's no fraud. You know, and so, but see, I just sort of shake my head because this doesn't seem to be of concern to, I guess, bulletproof Obama. I mean, I really don't know. I realize that might be a nasty. Analogy.
Well, I did have one other question come to mind when I read the article, Sandra, and it's this. Because, you know, it quotes Gerald Rafshoon, Jimmy President's communications director. It quotes James Carville. It quote and mostly it's quoting, and I guess it's the only people you could quote, really, that have any knowledge about the situation. Democratic people somehow having had White House experience. And not to be getting Ron Paul on and get all paranoid about the Trilateral Commission and the Bohemian Grove or anything, but why this story, why now?
Well, you mean about
about the aloofness and
is governing style?
I mean, I would think James Carville would... Why wouldn't James Carville say no comment?
Yeah, I don't know. There's also the, Robert Wright, can you please replace Biden with Clinton right away?
I saw that, and frankly, it kind of made a little sense. I hate to say it, but it did.
You know, and so, you know, there's a real undercurrent of desperation, you know, on the sort of... Democratic, you know, and some of the people who operate within the Democratic Party, it seems to be not overt, but if, you know, if you pay attention like we do, yeah, I mean, shit seems to be well unsettled to me. I don't know. Maybe it's just me. It just, there's a lot of unhappiness, okay? Let's just put it out like that.
And I guess Susie Madrack addressed it over at Crooks and Liars, too. Referencing Digby, referencing Charlie, you know, it's referencing Charlie Pierce, saying that nobody of whom I'm aware ever thought of President Obama as Mr. Happy Fun Guy. I am so leery, Sandra. I am so paranoid. I am so burnt once, not gonna get burnt the thousandth time over. By the 1% media, you know, when that's, and I'm not saying that there's no truth in it, but I question the timing. I question the whys and wherefores of it.
And especially when it's the New York Times, because we know that timing is every damn thing, and that every other story, they rush to the administration to see, oh, is it okay if we print it? I'm sorry. After Iraq War, that's how I view the New York Times now. And when the wiretap shit went on, we find out that, oh, they had that shit, but they held it until after the election.
Right.
I'm done with the for-profit media or New York Times or any of them, because why in the world would you do that? Because in the 70s, the New York Times would never have went to run into some administration to print something.
And asked for permission
I think we got to keep that in, I mean, at least I do. When I found out those sort of things was going on, I thought, oh, okay, well, this is more of a government organ now. This isn't...
Yeah, this is TASS, this is Pravda, this is Izvestia.
Yeah, this isn't the media that I was sort of, that I grew up with. You know what I'm saying? So,
and yeah, I had one of those experiences the other day watching the video of the funeral in North Korea. And in watching that, I heard the smarmy reporter saying, people were weeping in the streets and chanting, dear leader, don't leave us. Of course, there was no way to tell if this had been staged. And I just thought, hold the damn phone. How many other things have been, you know, because it was so condescending. And, you know, it probably was staged. That's the way authoritarian autocratic regimes work. Fine,
yeah,
no problem.
In the case of North Korea, there is a history of the people weeping over leaders that have died as far back as, you know, the 16th century king there. So, I mean, I understand that, you know, with the authoritarianism, there is the possibility of anything being staged, but, you know, we're not in a position to be that damn judgmental.
Precisely my point.
Okay. And especially if you look at...
Because, I mean, the whole Iraq War was staged from the New York Times standpoint, right?
Right. And, you know, culturally speaking, I don't think anybody here have enough insight on, you know, what goes on in North Korea to make any statements at all, actually. Because I've been sort of reading a little bit more about North Korea, and, you know, from the left and the right, there's a load of misinformation about it. So anyway, I won't even go into it because, you know, it's so standard. But the point you're trying to make is true. It's like, the New York Times, Pyongyang Times, what's the damn difference?
Bingo. Because they're house organs now. And frankly, you know, there is at least, you know, there's an archaeological record in that part of the world where, you know, 50, 60, 70 people, bodies found around the dead emperor. You know, there was a reason you prayed for the emperor's long life every day. Because if he checked out, it was game over for you too. And not to say that the same thing carries over the course of 2,000 or 4,000 years or whatever. We're human beings, Sandra, and, you know, if Jung is to be taken as having any credibility, then there's this sort of archetypal stuff that bangs around somewhere between the lizard brain and the conscious brain, and we react accordingly.
Well, yeah, and it's, you know, there forever to reassert itself now and then, you know? I mean, take the Internet. For example, if I may digress, I mean, there's a school of thought that the fact that we don't linger very long on page after page, link after link, it's tied to, you know, how man used to operate before reading. They would have to be very alert to their surroundings, so everything was very short-lived. And so
it's almost like pre-literate behavior, isn't it?
Right, and they're tying it to how we are using the Internet now. And so that's a... You know, that's a embedded in our DNA or whatever primal existence. I mean, it keeps coming back. So anyway, I realize we're digressing, but...
Well, but I think that's our job, isn't it?
Yeah, but getting back to the New York Times, I mean, I have to say this right quick, because I'm also disturbed by the instant flashback to 2002 and the build-up to the latest war, which right now, I guess, is Iran.
You noticed that, too?
Well, now, see, anytime I see Sanger articles on the front page, I'm like, oh, here we go. And I read his latest, you know, outing, and it's just like, oh, my God. You know, we're going to, you know, try to cut off their ability to operate in the global financial regime. Oh, but Obama's worried that gas prices might go up, you know, hence risking his election. I'm thinking, you know what? You people are so disgusting because, you know, I had a flashback. I heard something and I went and checked it out. That's for damn sure. When Bush came into office, oil was at $18, and then it doubled and tripled, and now we're at $100 plus, but there's no economic activity. So the prices are elevated permanently over $100. It's just blood-sucking. It's incredible, that whole paradigm. You really have to wonder what's going on.
Oh, yeah, because I got taken down that little trip down memory lane last night of gas prices and stuff, and I can remember, I think it was 1992. And I was taking a road trip, and there was a friend of mine had told me, because of the direction that I was going, Sandra, that there was a price war in gasoline going on the Kentucky-Tennessee state line down I-65.
And so it was driven down to how low?
In 1992, I filled up my truck on the Kentucky side of the Kentucky-Tennessee line for 55 cents a gallon.
Well, I mean, the thing is that, I mean, and then I also read today that the Saudi Arabia bought $30 billion in U.S. war planes, and the sort of ostensibly, oh, for the tensions, you know, with Iran. Then I think, let me dial back to, you know, one of my international relations classes. Oh, right. They used petrodollars to buy that shit.
Yeah, okay. It was a wash, right? There was no money changed hands.
It's not a wash for the people making the profit.
No.
It's a wash for us because we keep paying more and more. And, you know, it's just incredible to look at. It's like, it sickens you because, okay, so what? We're gearing up to send, what, more Americans to, I mean, it's just, I can't even wrap my head
around it. It's hard to avoid that fear right now, because this has the distinct feeling of something wicked this way comes. Because coupled with the we're selling $30 billion worth of aircraft to the Saudis story, there was also the story that said a couple of aircraft carriers transited the Straits of Hormuz today in what was obviously a, come on, you're going to do it? Do it! Just come on, and you know, sort of trying to goad the Iranians into acting so that we can have that first shot casus belli. Because, well, really, that whole business of being firing the first shot at Iraq, well, you know, it didn't play out so well. It's scaring the daylights out of me, Sandra.
Well, and I'm already hearing, you know, in sort of whatever the dry economic blogs I look at, that they're predicting, you know, $5 oil prices in the summer again. And I just happened to stumble upon, you know, my eyes are sort of burning, John Yoo, the case for military action in fill in the country, this case, Iran. So he has a long article about how the Obama should take what he calls a preventive attack on Iran's nuclear weapons facility.
Oh, Jesus.
This motherfucker got a job.
Why is he not in prison?
And he got a job on our dime here in California.
Oh, yeah, he's teaching at Bolt Hall, isn't he?
Well, he was there. I don't know if he's somewhere else at the minute, but he has a tenure. Anyway, he's, you know, you got all these people making noises about, it's okay to bomb. And I just don't really see any pushback at all. And it's starting to feel a lot like, you know, the Bush administration after 9/11 again.
And yet there was no 9/11 this time through.
No, it's not. And you know, it's sort of, I don't know. And any time I see these various writers in New York Times, you just have to shake your head and think, oh, my God, I guess, you know, because since they asked for permission and it's organized back and forth, you know, you got to assume that these stories are being approved of.
Oh, sure. Well, it's like the story on the fighters to Saudi Arabia, Sandra. You know, the headline from that I saw was U.S. sends strong message with Saudi fighter deal.
Yeah. Well, no. What kind of strong message?
Yeah, we're gonna bomb. Yeah, we're gonna bomb them. Yeah.
I don't know. I just am looking at that, you know, I wish I could remember my favorite quote, which is the Bush quote, fool me once, because, I mean, you know, we laugh.
Yeah.
But I'm thinking about that bullshit right now.
Yeah, fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, won't get fooled again.
Some madness, but it's just, I'm just really cynical at this point. And it's not so much because of Obama being reelected. I think this is the sort of parasitical geo-finance war, whatever you want to call complex, at work again, you know? And it could be Romney, Kane, or whoever. I think Ron Paul, they're going to destroy him before he gets a chance. And rightly so. I mean, he's a complete weirdo. But he's a, you know, he's a threat to their imperialism in the same tradition of, say, Charles Lindbergh. And I wouldn't want to be lumped in with him.
No.
But these, you know, the sort of strain of a weird white supremacist isolationist is very deep in this country. And I lump Ron Paul in with that madness.
Absolutely.
You know.
It doesn't...
And the anti-centralization overall, be it Abraham Lincoln or FDR, the Ron Pauls of the world, they just hate what that created more than the empire to me. I think it's more of that kind of stuff, the sort of states' rights and a collection of states as opposed to the United States. You see what I'm saying?
Right,
I think it's that mentality with Ron Paul, because he's a fucking racist, anti-Semite, homophobe, anti-woman. That's not the libertarian that we're always being told about, you know?
Well, exactly. And there's, but while we're talking about that topic within the context of Ron Paul, of course, we've got a new nominee out there for, and it's more disturbing because it comes from, of course, organized religion and the church, and I'm not going to do prayer meeting Wednesday or anything. But did you read about this cardinal from Chicago?
No, what did I mean?
Wow, I mean this is like the seven shades of sickening. His name is Cardinal George. They take Cardinal as their middle name or whatever. The guy I had the Ron Paul story about how, you know, he didn't want to use the gay man's bathroom, and there's the business about boil the gay HIV sheets for 15 minutes. But we haven't seen that kind of stuff in it. It's been a while, Sandra. But all of a sudden, it's everywhere. You know how it is, or at least I know how my mom was, living down south, growing up down south. If she would see, I mean, if it came in off a grocery bag, if she saw one cockroach in the kitchen, she went to war, okay? Because if you see one, there's a million, or there will be soon.
I forget the ratio, but you're right. Every one, there's some huge number of hidden ones, right?
Yeah, and I mean, it was full on, it was a raid decon party.
Oh, no, with the spray, with the pump.
Oh, yeah, and so that's what's happening now. We're finding out about Ron Paul, and they're the usual suspects out there, the weirdos from the right wing. But Cardinal Francis Cardinal George, the Archbishop, not just the Bishop, the Archbishop of Chicago, compared gay pride parade organizers. Now they weren't throwing glitter all over his house or his church or his dress or anything like that. They were just organizing the gay pride parade, and he described them as, and these are his words, not mine, something like the Ku Klux Klan. Really?
What, the?
The parade, the gay pride parade organizers, he said, are something like the Ku Klux Klan. And he says that gay people are trying to stifle the religious freedom of the Catholic Church.
Wow, just like teaching Chicano history is stifling white people. I mean, it's the same kind of thing.
Right, that's the business out of Arizona.
Yeah, you know, but anyway, I'm sorry. What else about the Catholic Church?
No, it was just breathtaking because he said the organizers of the parade. It's a parade.
And parade usually denotes fun, okay,
right.
Yeah.
The organizers invited an obvious comparison to other groups who have historically attempted to stifle the religious freedom of the Catholic Church. One such organization is the Ku Klux Klan, which well into the 1940s paraded through American cities not only to interfere with Catholic worship, but also to demonstrate that Catholics stand outside of the American consensus. It is terribly wrong and sinful that gays and lesbians have been harassed and subjected to psychological and even physical harm, and he's grateful that the parade organizers adjusted their start time to allow the parish to celebrate their Sunday Mass peacefully, because, see, the gay pride parade was going to interfere with Sunday Mass, because, well, I mean, it's not like they were going to go down the altar and try to eat the cracker or anything, but just seeing the gay... Right.
You know, but I'm still reeling from the fact that Catholic Charities receive 62% of their fucking funding from the government, and they want an opt-out to deal with gay people.
Right.
And last I heard, gay people paid a whole bunch of fucking taxes, a lot.
Oh, hell yes.
And they pay more than most any other group. And it's just kind of like, why in the world... It's just a good argument for why these churches and stuff like that should not be providing these services like that, because, you know, what you have to do to get these services, it's just incredible. And then they can say to a perfectly reasonable gay couple that, no, we can't deal with you for adopting. I mean, all of it makes me sick. I mean, already my tax dollars are going to feed this endless imperialism around the world. Now I gotta be okay with them denying gay people adoption and any kind of access to birth control or reproductive health too.
Yeah,
still get all that damn money.
You don't just have to talk. You gotta like it.
Well, anyway, yeah. And so when I hear, you know, about any kind of possibility that the Obama administration is going to grant that opt-out, you know, once again, you know, I'm sort of, you know, I'm really just shaky supporting this shit at all, you know. It's horrible. It's hard.
Well,
It's getting harder.
Well, it is, and it's just so damn frustrating because the right answer is so blatantly obvious. And you know that the right answer is not going to be given. Because, see, this whole story about this cardinal in Chicago, Sandra, it's not just that he said it. He was given an opportunity to retract the KKK comparison, and he doubled down.
Right.
You know, it won't back up, won't back off. And again, because a gay pride parade was going to pass a Catholic church during Mass... And that engendered the original statement. The original statement he made was, you don't want the gay liberation movement to morph into something like the Ku Klux Klan demonstrating in the streets against Catholicism. Well, damn, they weren't doing that. It was the gay pride parade.
No, but this coming from an institution like the Catholic Church, which is just seems to be riddled through and through with all sorts of just deviant type of existence. I'm like, you know, from their 10 p.m. midnight mass, I'm like, you know, what's going on?
Yeah, because that's... I don't live in a universe where 10 p.m. is midnight unless you travel a couple of time zones.
You know,
I mean, Jesus, midnight is 10 p.m. Midnight Rome is 10 p.m. in what, the middle of the Atlantic?
Right, and then them lobbying to stop... with the statute of limitations in New York. I mean, that entity is, they seem to be through and through corrupt. And I'm just sort of, I don't know. I'm trying to figure out where is their moral authority anymore. They seem to be
Well, I don't know. It's tucked away inside that glittery robe that he wears when he talks about resisting the Christmas glitter, I guess.
I mean, I don't even know where to start with that camp situation going on at the Vatican. I mean, the whole show is a show. But if they were, it would be funny, but it's so deadly serious, the kind of damage that they do around the world. So, you know, I'm scared of the Catholic Church. But I'm more scared of our government, more than happy to sort of dole out the money.
That got ramped up and injected with steroids under the Bush administration too.
Well, exactly.
Remember the Office of Faith-Based Initiatives?
Right.
Remember the $500,000, maybe $1 million that was pumped out, not to do anything except create flyers and billboards and propaganda for the adoption of. I would probably carry this phrase to my grave, Sandra. Snowflake babies.
Oh, and they had all them people there for some sort of photo op that was hideous with those babies that looked like something from Children of the Corn or Boys from Brazil. Yeah. No, that shit was odd. I was thinking, damn, where's Betty Davis? I thought she was gonna pop up.
And it's part of that fetus as fully formed human being movement, although it was subtle. Because, you know, to adopt a snowflake baby meant that you were going to go and get someone's unwanted fertilized ovum implanted so that there would be, you know, no genetic material from mom, no genetic material from dad, but you know what? There just wasn't a hell of a lot of them snowflake, well, there's a reason they call them snowflake babies, okay?
Yeah, right.
You go back to the horrors attending New Orleans in the aftermath of Katrina. And that Illinois Department of Natural Resources amphib team that came down to rescue people and got sent off to a hospital literally to rescue some zygotes. Like I said, this stuff is burnt into my brain.
You know, that reminds me, there is a country in, I don't know if it's the West or sort of the West, you know, where they have, like, embedded the personhood thing in their constitution. That would be Hungary. Do you know about this?
No.
Oh, yeah. At the moment of conception, it's considered a damn person. That's right now. That's today.
So why don't we just move all the freaks to Hungary?
Well, I just, you know, Hungary is completely, you know, has completely went back to one-party authoritarian rule, complete with the social conservative agenda. It's really.
Well, I had an email from a listener in Ireland the other night, and we were going back and forth over some First Amendment issues. But one of the things he pointed out that just made him crazy was that the Irish government enshrined an anti-blasphemy law against the church in its constitution.
Right, and the church is in serious difficulties in Ireland there because of the sort of never-ending horror tales of the children being abused right now. So, along with taxing people's pension, you know, there's the collapse of the Catholic Church going on in Ireland.
And you know, as that gets more serious, the definition of blasphemy might well become broader. What? You were talking about the church being broke? Blasphemer!
Right, right. I mean, it's sort of, well, because democracy is taking a back seat rapidly in Europe, you know, I shudder to think what's up next, because already people are saying, oh, wow, all that money that the bank gave the other banks, oh, look, they're not lending. And so we know where that's going to end up.
Yeah.
That's already falling apart. So, yeah, let me just say, at the moment it's quite nice being in California.
Because here where we are, we're kind of looking for a soft place to land, and there aren't many of them.
Well, I'm not saying that. I mean, California is obviously having troubles. I don't know. I should shut up because I'm still trying to figure out. I read somewhere that something the size of California is coming towards us from Japan. Some sort of, rubbish from the whole...
Yeah, it's just making its way across the Pacific.
And I'm like,
well, that seal, the Alaska seal story just sort of gave me the cold shivers, because you think about the things that eat seals, including humans. And if it is indeed the fact is indeed that they are radiation sick from Fukushima.
Well, yeah, and the fact that they're sort of just kind of like coming to that, I mean, isn't it like open sores and things that sort of, even for a layperson like us, the first thing you would think is radiation?
Yeah, because I don't know I don't think they get acne. No.
Well, I mean, it sounds like something from, just that they're exposed to some horrible radiation, but anyway.
No, I mean, do you think that, because I wonder sometimes if Stephen King sits up in Maine going, man, I couldn't even have come up with that. Seals? Really? Seals? But yeah, it's radioactive garbage, right?
Yeah, no, it's radioactive, and they were being understated, but they're saying it might be a bit of a problem swimming. I'm like, you know? Do I need to go rush and get into the ocean for one last time?
Yeah, enjoy it while you can.
Fuck, anyway, so, you know, I don't know, and I don't really mean to be cavalier about it, because another thing that's really disturbing me, because unfortunately for me, I had read these articles, because the permafrost thing is, like, doing my head in. I'm like, oh, my God, there's 30,000 years of dead methane producing stuff under permafrost,
and it's been it's being uncovered. Yeah,
I mean, how do you even? What is
that's going to be great for the climate?
And then I know Malloy talked about this. That's why I was laughing to myself. I said, no, he is not talking about that flu article. Did you happen to read
yes,
that?
Bless his heart for going there, because I didn't have the stomach for it.
No, I was shocked when I heard it. I said, because I had read that article too, and I thought, oh my God, because I was saying to my friend, I said, let me get this straight. Since nature don't allow this flu virus to mutate and fly around,
we did it for it.
We made it in the lab to see it and make it happen so we could possibly do what with it? I mean, the logic was stunning. It's like, what the fuck are you doing?
Even if it's weaponized stuff, I mean,
no,
please.
I don't even care.
Because, you know what, didn't we figure that out somewhere between 1914 and 1918, that shifting winds can turn your chemical weapons into their chemical weapons, your biological agents into their biological agents? It seems rather, but no, there's something. Was it a research effort toward coming up with a cure for a disease that they created that they could then profit off of? What the hell was it?
I don't know what it is. I mean, it's the most absurd logic I've ever heard, because I'm thinking to myself, well, if it's not mutating in nature, let's just leave it there. How about that?
Because evolution rolls at a considerably higher rate of speed in those itsy-bitsy organisms than it does, you know, among us, elephants, whales, things like that. But no, the story comes out that the government's saying, guys, now that you've done this, would you mind not? Because they were getting ready to publish how they done it.
Yeah, and not only that, but, you know, someone, you know, sort of nonchalantly in the article said, oh, well, you know, it's bound to be released within a decade. I mean, the guy was really sort of not moved by the whatever security, basically saying that anything that's created has a really good chance of being liberated from whatever security they have. And I'm thinking, they just said the December 1918 flu only killed 2%. This bitch is 50%.
Yeah, it's...
I was just shaking my head thinking, oh my God, you know? It really does make you wonder how people have hung on this long. I mean, as a species.
And, of course, there are those out there who will say, well, you know, that certainly would cause the big Malthusian die-off.
Well,
the monument in Georgia and all of that stuff that they get worked up about.
No, yeah, the whole die-off stuff. Yeah, no, all that stuff really sort of, you know, makes me nervous, because, I guess there are people and groups of people out there who really want this. Is that right?
That monument in Georgia... that was all done, it's there, it really is there. and it's got it's written in Egyptian and Latin and Russian and Greek and a couple of other English and a couple of other languages, basically creating rules to live by for after the big die-off and telling, you know, maintain population at X level. And it turns out, it really was the Rosicrucians. Because, I mean, they exist. And sustainable planet, stuff like that, yeah.
Oh, God, well, no, all that kind of stuff, I suppose it fits well with the kind of apocalyptic mood that everyone's in, but, you know, I'm also waiting for them to find more Earth-like planets. I swear that whole meme is really starting to do my head in.
Yeah, because they're still looking for the... And apparently there's this searchable database of stuff that Kepler may not have looked at that you can go and look for and see if you can find a planet yourself, so you might get to name it, you know, Planet Sandra.
Oh, God.
If you've got the time for it.
Oh, man.
Yeah, now the ones that they've found recently, the two Earth-shaped ones, are a little too hot.
Yeah.
But like I said the other night, I suggest that we tell the Republicans that that they're loaded with oil and start building the spaceships now and wait till they're too far gone to get back to tell them that the, you know, surface temperature is 1,400 degrees.
Well, can they take Stephen Harper with them? Damn, that fool. He is such bad news. I feel bad for Canada, and hence I feel bad for us, because don't you think that they are now going to use this Iran threat to sort of impact on that Keystone bitch thing, I bet, you know.
Oh, and, you know, the messaging's already going out. No, we really need that oil. We need that gasoline.
Right, but no one reminds the people, including that ignorant Rick Perry. It's like, dude, that oil is going on the global market, and they just lie into Americans.
But see, apparently they've heard that. They've heard us saying that, Sandra, because... Like I said, I guess it was yesterday or the day before, some former Bush administration Energy Department official was on an MSNBC Babble program and said, "Oh no, that's going straight into America's gas tanks."
But it's a lie.
Yes, it is a lie.
And they're lying. You know what I mean? It's horrible. It's horrifying. Because I don't know if you saw that picture of, like, in Canada, it's like, oh well, actually, you know, it's a huge, larger area that's being, you know, tar sand. It's huge. It's massive.
Yeah. And what Bill McKibben said is true. Right now, they've got a straw in it. But in 5 years' time, they want a quintuple production.
No, but they've already admitted that it's like 40% larger than what they've been telling the Canadians and hence the world. So... And this is with Stephen Harper. I swear he was on the boat himself, rushing up to claim the great Arctic resources. I don't know if you saw that the other day. I was like, is Stephen Harper, is he also 5'2"? I swear to God, he don't look too tall. All right.
I guess Canada doesn't have that we won't elect short people problem that we do.
Oh, shit. Anyway, so... Yeah, don't get me fixated on Canada, because, you know, you just want to think Canada is fairly reasonable.
I need a
freak in charge. That man ain't right.
No, when you're living in a house where everybody's gone a little bit nuts.
Yeah, the armed madhouse.
And every now and then the arguments and the battles and the brawls sort of spill out into the front yard. You kind of just hope that the neighbors are okay. I need Canada to remain sane.
I know.
Because we're not. We're not. I mean,
the banking to remain stable and all this sort of madness, but it ain't. Shit seemed to be unraveling there.
No, and that's because all of this is contagious. It's like something that David from Tennessee said a few minutes ago with regard to the possibility of the Senate flipping. You know, he said, if the Senate flips to the Republicans, look them out. The arguments, and I love this, the arguments won't be between center-right Dems and center-further-right Repigs. It'll be neocon teabaggers jousting with prophetic Reconstructionist Christians over what sort of Old Testament constitutional law shall be the law of the land. You know, just not my land. Please.
No. And combine that with Mr. Obama, whose greatest wish is to do some sort of entitlement reform. See, that's another reason why I'm just sort of not that excited about him facing not an election coming up. Because imagine, it's president not sure, a Republican House, Republican Senate. Gee, you know, what do you think can happen with that combination?
Not pretty, is it?
Permanent Bush tax cuts, you know.
Oh, that'd be the first thing on the new Congress's agenda, wouldn't it?
Some age, you know, means testing of all the rest of the safety net programs, raising up the retirement age, premium support. That got to be my favorite meme right now. Premium support.
Sounds like something you buy from Amazon, you know.
Well, anyway, I shouldn't. I mean, who knows what Mr. Obama's going to do if he gets reelected? And I don't know. I don't see why he wouldn't be reelected, except for the whole voting situation. Because, you know, who's he going to run against?
You know, at this point, I guess it doesn't look like it's going to be Romney. I mean, it just...
Well, Romney is going to be really weakened, though, coming to the general election, isn't he? I mean, they...
And the question was put out there, how can he move back? Because there's no argument to be made that anybody running for the Republican nomination is anything, has even got the word center in their vocabulary. And how can he get back to a center? You know, for all that we transposed onto him, Barack Obama ran pretty much center-right all along, didn't he?
Well, yeah. I mean, if people had looked at his voting record and, you know, even just sort of stopped and stumbled across that his mentor was that dude from Connecticut, I'm Lieberman.
Yeah.
You know, that should have set off alarm bells for any progressive right there. But anyway.
Yeah. And I don't know. I hate to ask, but we didn't hear from you last night. Did you? Because, you know, this is our moment of shallowness, Sandra. Did you hear that right winger from talking about the strong, muscular, healthy, athletic young man Tim Tebow? If you didn't go, you got to go to Right Wing Watch and catch that clip. Because it's precious.
Well, wait. Ew, that don't sound. What is he talking about?
Well, he was saying that people like you and me and other folks, we don't like little Timmy because he's saving himself and being pure for marriage. That's what's got us upset, that he's not running around making it rain with some floozy in a strip joint in Vegas.
Well, as opposed, maybe he's just having maybe doing something else, everything but. In of course, I don't buy none of it.
No, but when you see this guy talking about, and he's, I mean, here's this strong, good-looking, manly, athletic young man. It's like something out of the Rocky Horror Picture Show.
Well, yeah, no. So it sounded like maybe he might want to help him out with that loss of virginity thing himself. Is that what you're trying to say?
Yeah, a little bit, yeah.
Listen, no, all these people are so suspect. Who knows? Especially when it's a regressive like that, you never know. That's gross.
All kinds of gross. 17.
I mean, but hopefully he'll get beat for the rest. How many games they got left?
Kansas City Chiefs. Romeo Crennel out there laying for him.
That's just they only have one game left, or is it two more left?
Yeah, I mean, some serious stuff has to happen. The Raiders have to win. And the Chiefs have to win, i.e. the Broncos have to lose, or else the Broncos are the AFC West champions.
Which means they get to go, so we have post. See, I'm trying to avoid how we cannot have postseason Tebow.
Right. You need the Chiefs to beat the Broncos, and you need the Raiders to get, I don't know who the Raiders play. Somebody will tell me, but...
But didn't the Chiefs beat... Aren't they coming off of beating Green Bay, or am I dreaming?
No, that happened.
Oh, shit. So they do have some tools that they can pull out.
Well, you would think so, yeah. I mean, but the thing is, that may have been their one-off.
That might have been it. Yeah, see, that's a bit of a worry. Yeah, they may not have nothing left. So... Denver, yeah, I don't know. I don't know what the schedule is, but it would be just brilliant if he was to lose out for the rest, you know. And then not have be in the playoffs. That would be my ideal situation.
It would be a delight. But it's gonna take some help, and I don't know if Marty's out there to tell me who the Raiders are playing or someone. But that with our luck, it'll be the Raiders and Patriots and Chiefs and Broncos.
Well, we have our own.
No, maybe it's San Diego. Something in my head says it's San Diego.
Well, we have our own sports nightmare going on out here, at least for me, because, damn it, if the Kings aren't looking fucking good. And, see, that's a problem, because they're trying to shove this arena thing down our throats. And don't get me wrong, I'm a Kings fan. Shit, I live in Sacramento. Why not? But I can't, because they already want to sell off the parking meters, you see, to pay for this arena. And so if they're beating the Lakers and they're beating folks, it's a problem.
Because the next thing you know, you're gonna because Sacramento can't afford this, that, or the other thing. But we'll soak them for a new arena.
Right. But don't get me wrong. I was more than happy to watch the Kings beat the Lakers. Because I hate the Lakers, so it was all good.
Well, we've talked about it before. I know what goes through your mind every time you see Kobe handle the ball.
Ah, that's my thing. Yeah,
that's his thing.
That's what goes through my mind. But also, though, his wife is like 10 years. It's up. It's time to pay. And she about as fine as fuck. So good night, Mr. Bryant, and give me your money.
Yeah, pony up.
She. I'm like, well, okay, girl.
Kind of like that. Kind of like that contempt petition that. In the Gingrich divorce, I saw, those papers were released the other day putting the lie to everything that Gingrich was saying. Oh, no, my wife wanted the divorce back in 1980. No, she wanted it. No, I didn't want it. But it turns out he filed the complaint and she filed an answer that said she didn't want a divorce. But the idea of his, his full name, Newton Leroy Gingrich, we're going to be calling him Newton Leroy Gingrich till he drops out of the race.
Oh, no, his name is... No way is it Leroy.
Oh, yeah. Southern mothers put together baby names, especially little boy names, strictly from the viewpoint of knowing that they're going to have to use all three names together. Last night, Albert just about, I'm still laughing, thinking, Newton Leroy Gingrich, get your big old head over here right now.
That's a shame that's that man's middle name. He's a horror show. God, I can't. But he's through, isn't he? Isn't he pretty much finished with the whole Virginia thing?
No, he's suing.
Of course.
He and Rick Perry are suing to get on the ballot, because they couldn't get on it legally. I guess they're being discriminated against. I don't know if that's going to be I guess that's got to be the claim.
Oh, God. Well, I just don't... He seems to have lost some momentum, though. Am I wrong?
Oh, yeah, he has. He has. He said in the last day or so, I don't have to win Iowa. And if I come in second or maybe a close third in New Hampshire... So, no, he's backing up. He's getting in that next trench backwards. He's retreating.
Listen, I'll let you go, but I have to bring up this. It's under... Stupid Americans shopping. Did you see the footage of all them folks trying to get $180 tennis shoes?
Yeah, I did, and I don't get it.
It's so disturbing. And then I looked at a couple of videos, and unfortunately, some of them people had something to say. And I was like, oh, man, is this the future? Because they were so ignorant. It's like, why?
Oh, no, it was Soylent Shoe.
It was just bizarre. This one fool was like, I had to lick it. And I'm thinking, you're licking the shoe? It was so bizarre. And first of all, $180 for a pair of shoes. I mean, it just is...
And what do you want to bet that of the people who got them, half of them were buying them for children, probably a little boy, who will grow out of same inside of 4 months. I mean, I've got a now 16-year-old son. I can't keep shoes on his feet. Because they just keep growing.
No, these girls, it's like, what the? All of a sudden it's time to get more tennis shoes. So, no one's buying none of that. And it's just, to me, it's bizarre. Because I also heard that people were selling them for twice as much on eBay. And I'm thinking, oh, wow. So,
what are they? Throwback commemorative.
What, from 1989?
Yeah, they're like throwback commemorative Michael Jordans.
Yeah, well, no, but it's just, I don't know. I'm thinking, oh, these folks, they need to be doing something else. Because there was just, it looked like to me, thousands of them. And then one other story, did you happen to see what happened at the Mall of America?
Oh, yeah, they got locked down for a riot, too, didn't they?
Right, it was like, the headline was like 200 youth running through, you know, racing through and, you know, fighting, and, you know, the merchants had to lock shit down. And I'm thinking, oh, you know, watch this space. I guess that's the next thing, you know. And only in America, you're not going to have riot. Yeah, it's just going to be sort of England, but, you know, to the 10th degree.
But, yeah, but over consumer goods.
That's what I'm saying, you know. You know, it's not, you know, but you ain't going to have to shoot some person of color to get them going. Just sell some fucking, maybe a new iPod that floats above your head or something. And then they'll be rioting over it.
God.
No, anyway, you know, I am so, yeah, I'm sorry to be so.
No. Look, it's hard to avoid that dystopian future vision of, you know, David from Maine was telling us the other night that there's talk that there will finally be a sequel to Blade Runner.
Oh, shit, that movie wanted me. I wanted to put an eye pick in my head when I saw the first one. They're doing another one?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's way up there on the all-time science fiction films, and I've got a soft spot for it. But it's just going to be, I don't know, maybe there can be some tennis shoe riots in it.
Oh, God. Well, no, when you were doing your tweets about these various Republicans and what they should be, like in the Star Trek, and I guess we had left off with Dune.
Yeah.
Because I was looking for it after doing that, because I wanted to watch that Fahrenheit 451, because I forgot about that movie is so bizarre with the firemen who are like burning.
Yeah, the firemen who burn things down instead of put out fires.
Right, I mean, because that's also in the same vein, you know, of Huxley and Orwell and whoever else.
Yeah, and it's coming true, because if you remember in Fahrenheit 451, they have television screens that take up the entire wall space of all four walls of a room. And the television programs interact with the viewer, so that you're standing there in the middle of the room and you're actually part of the 3D play. And then on top of it all, firefighters stand around and watch homes burn down. Well, we're kind of there, aren't we?
Yeah, we are, along with the effed up IPOs of Zynga and stuff that's not doing so well. Can't wait for the Facebook IPO, because, listen, let me ask you something. What the hell do they sell? It's so weird.
As far as I can tell, they sell virtual vegetables and virtual mafia wars.
And you can virtually work for free. Yay! I mean, I don't know.
It's a brave new world, Sandra.
It is. It's bizarre. Anyway, listen, have a good evening.
All right, you too. Take care.
Bye.
Bye now. And, just a couple of emails, Andy writing in, he says, since we're in the party of Joe Stalin with no one to push Mr. Obama to the left, no candidate permitted to challenge Mr. Obama from the left, then he will quite naturally shift to the right, further right into the welcoming arms of ex-Clinton chief of staff and Wall Street executive Erskine Bowles, who as joint lead on the Cat Food Commission will lead Mr. Obama to reform programs designated for the working class, Social Security and Medicare. And it's a frightening picture. It really is. The word dystopian is absolutely applicable to the circumstances. He says DLC corporate hack Democrats need to. Andy continues. DLC corporate hack Democrats need to be removed at all costs. So what if a Republican takes the seat? We work to get a progressive elected to take the Republican out. But you can almost never run a progressive against a sitting DLC Democrat. I agree wholeheartedly, because the party of Papa Joe Stalin, a.k.a. Wall Street's own Rahm Emanuel, will not let it happen. Never support or give any quarter to a DLCer who will slit a working class person's throat, a 99%er, in a second. You walk away and look for a progressive to support and work for a progressive in another race. A Rahm Emanuel DLCer is just as bad as any Republican. Economically, you will be sold out and burned beyond recognition if you're not a 1%er. And I think there's considerable truth in what Andy writes, but by the same token, there is something that roils my gut, for instance, in thinking, and this is just the most obvious example I can come up with, the race in Virginia between Tim Kaine and George Makaka Allen. Now, Tim Kaine is the guy who, as head of the Democratic National Committee, handed us the stirring defeat of 2010. Okay? Gone are the days of 50-state strategies and quaint ideas like that. But by the same token, he is not the same as George Makaka Allen. There is a legislative difference between the two. I would not want to be a Virginian trying to vote in that election. And this goes to the heart of what matters to us as progressives, as liberals. By the way, did you know that progressive is the most popular, most positively identified political niche term in the United States? It came in, there was polling done, and it came in ahead of the word conservative. Just say it. But where, DLC, Rahm Emanuel, or no DLC, Rahm Emanuel, where is the progressive in Virginia with the clout to challenge George Makaka Allen 6 years from now? Where are the progressives in Nebraska with the clout to challenge that guy who calls welfare recipients coons 6 years from now? Now, I would imagine there may well be, who knows, maybe Ned Lamont, in Connecticut to run for Joe Lieberman's seat. But that's Connecticut. Where's the progressive who's going to mount a serious campaign against Jim Demented from South Carolina or Jefferson Beauregard Sessions of Hood from Alabama? Where is the progressive who will challenge John Kyle in Arizona? Maybe there's hope in Arizona. You know, Jesus, the coal industry is going hammer and tongs to defeat John Tester in Montana, and John Tester, while a coal whore, I mean, he's done everything except, well, he's probably done that too, for the coal industry, but it's not enough. So they're going hard after him, even though he himself is as pro-coal as the day is long. I mean, for God's sakes, Joe Manchin in West Virginia stole Tester's idea about the liquid coal plants, okay? And here, in my own West Virginia, Joe Manchin is going to have to run for Senate again in 2012. Where's the progressive that's going to file against him for the Democratic primary? Oh, you do it, Bob. Ah! Where are we? Where are they? And it's a function, you know, the effort is underway. I mean, it has finally started, PDA and DFA that Andy references those organizations as being good and being helpful. You know, they put on candidate training seminars and things like that. But that means we are a generation away. We are a generation away from being able to do anything. It used to be, when I was in my 20s or whatever, I could think generationally. In my 30s, my early 30s, I could think generationally. I can no longer think generationally. I have to think about what's coming up. And the difference between, say, the Democrats holding the Senate and the crazy-ass Republicans holding the Senate... It is what David in Tennessee said. If the Republicans get the Senate, there will be great debates between, are we going to rapture naked, or are we going to rapture with our clothes on?
Mr. President, it is the sense of the Senate that we are going to rapture with our clothes on. It's real. It's what is going to happen. This is in no wise a defense of DLC Democrats, but at least walk into the voting booth with your eyes wide open, knowing what's coming. And if you don't think that a Republican can screw you quicker than a Democrat, you ain't been watching them long enough. If they take the Senate in November 2012, I'm willing to bet a sawbuck on it. I'll bet $5 that the first bill will be the permanent extension of the Bush tax cuts. Anybody want to take that bet? Anybody want to say no? They won't? I mean, I guess you could bet against me on the theory that, no, the first bill will be a flag-burning amendment. Or a resolution praising, stating that America was founded as a heterosexual Christian nation. But I think they'll get right to work, don't you? Yeah. Let's keep things cooking. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello?
Hey, Jim.
Good evening. How are you?
I'm okay, I guess.
Well, I can understand that. Can you hear me okay?
I hear you. You're a little low.
Well, let me see if I can correct that.
Oh, ever so much better.
I have never been one to be the Nostradamus or to have in my possession a crystal ball or a palantir from the Lord of the Rings in which I can foresee the future. However, based upon what's happening, as you and your last caller had discussed it, it would appear to me as though the Republicans will probably take the Senate and we will have the forces of reaction coming into this country. And I can't see any words of comfort as Scrooge asked Marley, do you have any words of comfort to give me? And he says, none. And that's basically it. It doesn't look good. Now, it may be better, but as far as having progressive candidates running against these entrenched conservatives, like DeMint in South Carolina and the other ones you mentioned, I can't see anything happening there. I really can't.
No.
They're too firmly ensconced. So they have too much money. And they have the corporate America behind them because their interests coincide with those of the corporate America. You know that, and I know that. And it simply is a bleak picture, but a realistic one.
It's all too realistic for my liking. It's terrifying.
Oh.
I mean, really, I have this nightmare vision of a thoroughly Republican Congress. I don't know. I envision them all on acid.
No, they're not on acid. They're very clear-minded in their objectives. They're not on acid. I don't know. No, they're very clear-minded. And they're very objection-oriented as far as what they wish to accomplish to the jot and tittle.
I mean, I can see the extension of the Bush tax cuts. And again,
I can too.
I can see the House taking up the impeachment of Barack Hussein Obama for Solyndra or whatever else strikes their fancy at the moment.
Well, I don't see that as much as you do. And that's a company that went, a solar energy company that went bankrupt with federal aid, correct?
Yeah.
Well, that would be a hard sell. I mean, any company can go bankrupt.
Well, it would be a hard sell if you were sane and if you were normal and if you operated with a rational mind, Jim, but we're talking about Republicans.
Well, I don't know. I'm not going to be labeling here because I've dealt with so many labels all my life. I'm just tired of them. But what you say may very well be true, and only time will tell. But it is true.
I'd like to figure out some way for time to not tell Jim.
Well,
to hang on, because I can't as much as I may share some of Andy's thinking on this, I can't just bring myself to that point where I say, throw the match and watch it burn. Because they can do tremendous damage in 2 years, in six, in 12.
They can. Of course they can. And they have their minds set upon doing a lot of things which are antisocial, anti-humanitarian, and very, very selfishly minded in their orientation. That's exactly what they're doing.
I mean, just,
they know what they're doing.
Just to go back to crazy old Ron Paul for a minute, Jim, I saw a story earlier today where, now they've scrubbed it from the Ron Paul website, but he was very proud to receive the endorsement of a fundamentalist preacher who wants to, there's no other way to say it, who wants to bring in capital punishment for anyone found to be gay. Ron Paul got his endorsement. That thinking is out there. And he says, well, you know, it'll take us a while to do it, but I believe we can.
Well,
got to start somewhere.
Bob, that's been out there a long, long time. I mean, good Lord in heaven, I can remember.
And they haven't gone away from it, have they?
No, I can remember back in 30 years ago in 1981 when AIDS was first, began to come on the scene. It was said that it was God's punishment for homosexuals and all those other deviant groups, IV drug users and this, that, and the other. And there was no compassion, no real pity or anything like that. And I can remember the marches in San Francisco and the marches in New York and places like that, major urban centers, with the gay population saying, we want to live. And I can remember young men who were testifying before Congress about, one said, please do not let my epitaph read that I died in vain. I mean, if you go back to two books, and we've talked about these books before, one is The Band Played On, and
right,
Son of the Coming by Randy Shills, who himself died of AIDS. And he predicted with stunning accuracy the fatality rates of this disease and what it would do. And all the figures that he portrayed back in the 80s have come to truth now, or come to fruition, or I hate the word, he used the word fruition, but they've come to pass. That's a better word. He was truly a seer, a prophet in his own time. A lot of people didn't like Randy Shields because of what he said, but he told the truth, as they have in many prophets who have told the truth. And prophets, as you know, are not honored in their own time.
Or their own land.
And I hate to see this having happened, but it has happened. And, you know, in addition to AIDS, we have so many other biological things to worry about. I mean, we had, of course, you know, back in the days of the Cold War, we were talking about nuclear weapons and what these nuclear weapons could do. But if you will look, for example, in the former Soviet Union, in Kazakhstan, and I believe it's in Kazakhstan, in the middle of the Aral Sea, the Soviets had a tremendous, and my point of reference is inside the Soviet military. And, having worked for DOD, I used to spend a lot of time having to deal with this stuff, Bob, and working with the information that I was given. But, I mean, they have a factory there that they have decommissioned, so to speak, since the fall of the Soviet Union. And what the Russians did with, I don't know how many versions of anthrax, not knows how many versions of bubonic plague and flu and stuff like that, the Russians just simply buried it. And 20 years later, when these definite commissions have come to pass to examine these sites, guess what they found? All these pathogens are still active.
Yeah.
They've gone back into Alaska with the 1918 flu virus, and they have exhumed corpses who were in reasonably good shape because it's pretty cold up there. And guess what they found?
Still alive.
The virus is still, it's dormant.
But viable.
But viable, exactly, exactly.
And so then you add on top of it these geniuses who decided to mutate the bird flu to the point that it could be transmitted among humans?
Yeah, yeah, I mean...
Jim, take a little bit of that DOD Pentagon experience and see if you can lead us, to the extent possible, through the rationale that says that's a good idea, even though it wasn't us.
It's not a good idea because this is the sort of thing that was created by people who wanted to basically support the doctrine of mutually assured destruction, be it from radiation or disease. And yet they were funded, well funded, on both sides of the Atlantic, in this country and in the Soviet Union, that we could be the nation that could simply destroy the other. But in so doing, what they have done is create a doomsday machine which could destroy the entire world. And these scientists who were paid to do this were paid very well, very handsomely, but well funded. And it got to the point where neither side could control it. And for a virus to jump species, that is something that does not occur. Now, I may be wrong, and I'm sure there's someone out there who'll correct me. For a virus to jump species like this without being purposely mutated by some type of arcane device, that's not something that's normal, if I may use the word normal. But, you know, if you start manipulating viruses and other virals to do this, it can be done. It is being done in Russia now.
And if I read the article correctly, the quote from the Environment News Service says, the work in which the avian flu virus was made human transmissible.
Mm-hmm.
The quote is, the work, just listen to this list, Jim. The work was funded by the U.S. National Institutes of Health, the Japan Society for the Promotion of Science, the Ministry of Education, Culture, Sports, Science, and Technology of Japan, and the Japan Science and Technology Agency. And, of course, they reported it in the journal Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences, which prompted government officials to say, would you not give out the whole recipe, please?
Well, may I ask you this? Why were they doing this?
I'm not being obtuse, but it kind of comes back to the question I asked you. What mind says, hey, this is a good idea? Oh, this would be fun. This will advance human learning.
The only thing I can think of, the reason they were doing that, is for a method to combat these viruses if they did in fact mutate and become transmissible to humans. I don't know. That's just speculation on my part. I'm not offering that as anything concrete. And as you know me from previous conversation, I don't deal with speculation too much. I try to deal with concrete specifics.
Sure, sure.
Glittering generalities. That's the only reason I can think of it. But I mean, these pathogens, for example, now we have a laboratory at Fort Detrick, Maryland, and they are developing all types of things still.
Well, wasn't that where the anthrax came from that was sent around back in 2001?
Oh, Bob, we've had anthrax going back to World War II because the British were developing anthrax on Anthrax Island. And even those anthrax spores contained on Anthrax Island developed back in the late 30s and early 40s during World War II, they are still active and nothing can live there. Have you now heard of Anthrax Island?
Yes, I have. I have. But I mean, the terrorist attack of 2001 that was never solved to anyone's satisfaction, at least was said to have come from Fort Detrick.
Well, yeah, but I mean, you know, this stuff goes back 50 or 60 years, these biological pathogens and how people could use them. And the Brits were the first, or was, I'm sure the Germans were probably involved in it too, and to a certain extent, anybody else who could fund a project. I mean, it's been around a long time. But for these anthrax spores that are over 70 years old, having been buried by the British and having rendered this island completely and totally uninhabitable, it's not safe to even go there unless you have some type of protected suit, or you're crazy. I mean, it's been going on a long, long time.
And then there's the natural stuff that Sandra alluded to that gets loosed when the permafrost goes away. And that's kind of in line with what you said about the buried bodies from the 1918 flu epidemic in Alaska.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, freezers preserve things.
Yeah, they do. And of course, you know, you've got these problems with the Russian Federation. They will not allow these investigating agencies to go in there and see what they're still doing. Well, the reason they're still doing that inside the FSR is because we're still doing it, and they know it. And it's absolutely crazy. I wish I could say that they were developing things like this to aid medical science, but I don't think that they are.
Well, I mean, there's no way that you can aid medical science by taking a flu virus that doesn't transmit to humans and making it so that it does. That doesn't advance science in any way. It's the kind of thing that makes the knuckle walkers and the mouth breathers out there hate science.
Well, I don't think the scientists themselves realize exactly what they're doing, because they're going from one step to two step to three step, and they don't know what four step's going to be. You know, I question their own ability to control what they're creating. That's my point. I mean, even though they may have good intentions or whatever.
And thus we find ourselves back at the opening pages of Mary Shelley's famous book.
Yeah, written the Villa Deodati by Lord Byron and who else was there? Percy Bysshe Shelley.
Yeah.
Creating this type of Frankenstein monster. And and ironically enough, when Churchill was talking about the Nazis, he was talking about them prevailing in the light of perverted science. And you know, anything that you're dealing with like this, the development of fissile or fusion type materials or pathogens or things like the AIDS virus and this, that, and the other, it's not going to come to any good end. It really isn't. I mean, AIDS is where now. Nobody talks about it anymore. They've gotten tired about talking about it, because they're saying, oh, well, we've got AIDS people who are surviving to long ages, and, you know, they used to have what they called viaticums on insurance policies for AIDS victims so they could collect after they died. And because of the cocktails and the protease inhibitors and things like that, people are surviving 20 and 30 years who have been affected by the HIV virus. But still, there's no way to correct it.
Right. That does not constitute a cure.
No, there is no cure.
That's
a matter of survivability, and people have simply forgotten about it. And it's no longer in the news the way it used to be. But it's still around, and there's still no cure. Though I have heard that there may be, I think, in years to come, some type of cure for it. And I hope there is. I hope there will be a Jonas Salk type of individual who can develop some type of antidote or some type of method by which a person can be inoculated against it. But it seems as though the shift has totally gone away from that. And it's just something that people are living with, and they say, well, if you get it, you get it, and you do what you can. If you have the money to get these cocktails and protease inhibitors, good for you. And if you don't, you're going to die. And that's all there is to it. And in most countries...
And see, I still hear something like that, Jim, and I say, you know, Jesus, that's a hell of a note.
Well, in most countries, now in this country, with people who are able to access health care, they can give or have been given life extensions. However, in your third world nations like Africa, other places like that, it's a death sentence. Still is. And there is no end to it. And unfortunately, it just looks very bleak. And I hate to be like this, because I've always told you years ago that instead of being a survivalist, I'm a desolationist. And I'm not trying to spoil anyone's prospects for the new year by saying that, but it's just my simple, unqualified opinion. And that's all I offer it as. But it doesn't look real, real good.
Well, I don't know. You know, you coined that word, desolationist. I think it also goes hand in hand.
That was coined a long time ago, Bob, back in the days of when we were trying to outdo the Russians and they were trying to outdo us by saying, oh, you know, those people. And
but my point was there's also an aspect of it that smacks of just dealing with reality as reality appears to stand.
Unfortunately, you have to deal with reality. And if you don't, you're a fool. And the way I can see it, you have all of these weapons and things like that, biologicals and all types of things, that could be released at a moment's notice. I mean, I don't know who at all has these things besides this country and the Russian Federation. I'm sure there are other countries that do. I've never made a study of proliferation of biologicals among non-superpowers, but I'm sure you have somebody in a lab that's cooking up something that can make them feel like they can overtake their adversary, but it all comes to no good end. It all comes to no good end whatsoever. And I just can't, you know, I can't get too hung up about the National Football League or Timmy Tebow or whatever, because I just think we have more important things to deal with and talk about, and that's the survivability of our planet.
I tend to agree with those people. Then there's a film about it, and it was quite stirring, and I can't remember the title right off the cuff, Jim. The planet, if we manage to kill ourselves off as a species, the planet will heal. The planet will heal itself to one degree or another.
Well, perhaps.
But I am a humanist all the way down to the ground, and I'm not much interested in I have the same degree of interest in a planet without humans on it that I have about Mars. Because it's a planet without humans on it. It's fascinating. We can certainly learn things by studying it, but there's no human angle.
Well, it's going to be a lifeless planet if these things are unleashed. And, you know, you were talking earlier about some incident in the Strait of Hormuz with Iran. Now, 30 years ago, our flashpoint was Berlin and the Fulda Gap, right?
Right.
They were envisioning huge divisions of the Soviet military trying to overturn or overrun Western Europe, right?
It's blowing through with the tanks and, yeah.
Exactly. And, of course, the only solution to that would be the use of tactical nuclear weapons. But since one-third of the world's oil, and I think I'm right in saying that, and if someone is out there who is differing with my opinion, please correct me. But I think I heard today that one-third of the world's oil goes through the Strait of Hormuz.
Yeah. No, I think that's
and
a good number.
And the Iranian Navy is conducting operational exercises there, are they not?
Yes. And consequently, we sailed a couple of carriers right through the Straits of Hormuz today to sort of poke them with a sharp stick a little bit.
Right, and we're talking basically oil and the hydrocarbon industry, correct?
Absolutely.
Well, you know, in addition to fuel and gasoline, we depend on the hydrocarbon industry for so many other things. Plastics, fertilizer.
Cosmetics.
Everything. Everything is tied to oil. I mean, when you talk about the hydrocarbon industry and coal and stuff like this, you're talking about much more than pollution, much more than just fuel to keep generators alight. I mean, you're talking about everything that you have in your house today. I mean, the very...
is touched in some way or another by it. Yeah, because it takes energy to produce it.
Exactly.
And that goes...
And chemically to produce it.
And that, you know, that goes to the heart of what...
Plastics, everything, Bob, it's just tied to it. And what I'm asking you, and this is not a rhetorical question, how can we replace the importance of the hydrocarbon industry to produce what we
have? It depends on which sector you're talking about, Jim.
I'm talking about the whole thing besides just fuel. I'm talking.
No, I know, and I'm trying to dissect it real quick.
Okay.
If we proceed from a starting point that says that these hydrocarbon fuels or these hydrocarbon substances are by definition finite. I mean, can we begin there? Because, you know, the theories of abiotic oil and things like that are pretty out there. There's, you know, there might be more being made, but it'll be a few million years before it's ready.
Right. I mean, let's face it, these are definitely materials that will run out.
Right. So if you recognize that, and if you recognize things like peak oil, which we passed in the United States a long time ago, and which the Saudis are passing and the Iranians are passing, everybody's passing it, and that's why we're getting ourselves into a lather about tarry goop in Canada. You know, the reason the tar sands have been known about for eons, or not eons, but you get my meaning.
I do.
But nobody was interested in them because they were so energy intensive that it was not profitable to go after them. But now that world reserves of oil are depleting and people know it,
they're going after these.
And the theory of peak oil says that the supply of oil will continue to diminish, and not only will it continue to diminish, it will become harder to get at and more expensive to get.
Oh, God, yeah. They're going to have to drill down thousands and thousands of feet to find, you know, what's left there.
And so if you take
it... it'll run out.
If you begin from there, Jim, and you understand that there are... And I acknowledge there are things that you have to have substances in order to create. But with that acknowledgement comes also the realization that if that is the case, then you cannot be profligate about the way you use it. And you know, even talking about the tar sands, it is a discussion of profligacy, okay? Because it's, because that, you know, that Bush administration official that I heard yesterday, oh, no, it's going to go straight into American gas tanks. Well, you know, that's the last place it should go, Jim, is into anybody's gas tank, because there will be needs for it that we have not yet come up with a replacement. Now, on other fronts, there is a study out in the last month that is scientific, peer-reviewed, the works. And contrary to what, for instance, the coal industry likes to say, we can have right now a nationally powered grid. Every house that needs electricity, every business that needs electricity, every building that needs electricity, every industrial process that needs electricity can be powered by the wind and the sun. It is physically, it is scientifically possible right now. Okay? So a prudent person acknowledging the finitude of hydrocarbons would say, well, the smart money then would be on doing that.
But how many people are going to back the smart money? Because they're basically looking for the here and the now and for whatever profits they can gain from it.
Right. It's the profiteering. It's the profiteering that is the sand in the Vaseline, so to speak.
Well, exactly. And unfortunately, people have a way of allowing stupidity to get its way and being very, very short-sighted. I mean, Bob, if we were farsighted as a species, or a race, or whatever you want to call us. Why would we fight these wars every 20 years?
We wouldn't do half the dumb shit that we have done over the last 5,000 years. I agree. You know, there's a model. There are a couple of models out there. The one, of course, that comes up most frequently is Rapa Nui, you know, Easter Island. And you think about that grove of four remaining trees and the genius who said, you know what we need to do?
Let's burn them off.
We need to cut those down. Now, we can make one more Moai god who will perhaps cause more trees to grow.
I mean, just like the city of Tikal in the Yucatan Peninsula.
Sure.
I mean, these people were so intent on whitewashing their pyramids with some type of lime that required the
that they burned down their entire forest.
And they burned their entire forest down, and they literally made these beautiful cities that they had so assiduously pursued the erection uninhabitable.
Right. And there's another example from some native peoples on the California coast. Some enterprising archaeologist did a statistical analysis of, and I know you know what a midden is, you know, where you just casually pile up your shells and your garbage and stuff.
Right.
And they proved to be incredibly valuable pieces of information and sources of data. And this one enterprising soul analyzed the shell mounds, the middens, of this particular ancient people living on the California coast. And what he found out was at the bottom of the midden, or she, or they, at the bottom of the midden is really yummy stuff, like great big oysters and big old clams. And then as you come up through the layer, well, there's no more great big oyster shells and no more great big clam shells. And then it's, you know, some sort of middling, crappy, maybe freshwater mussels that don't taste so good. And so as the midden is built up in the same place over the course of generations, what you find is that they eat the good stuff, and they eat all of the good stuff. And nobody says, hey, let's let the good stuff make more good stuff. No, let's eat all the good stuff, and then we'll eat the crap. And by the time you get to the top of the midden, they're eating stuff that the dogs won't eat.
Exactly. And the stratum, the geologists have discovered, realize exactly what you said. I mean, they have basically, they killed the goose that laid the golden egg.
Precisely. And that is what we have done with oil. We've gotten all the good stuff. And now we're willing to put our very continue, because see, those people who made the shell mounds or the middens or whatever, they disappeared or they went away when there was nothing more to eat. You know, you can see the same thing replicated among the dwellings and the settlements of the Anasazi in the Southwest Desert.
Right.
You can literally tell when they started running out of trees, and when they ran out of trees, it was time to disperse.
And they were a highly developed civilization.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Civilizations of the New World, even almost equal to that of the Mayans and the Aztecs, because of the structures and the stuff they left behind.
But again, they literally consumed themselves out of house and home. And that's, and I agree with you about the failings and faults of humankind, but that doesn't make me any less frustrated. Because,
and your frustration,
when you've got the evidence in front of you, and it's the kind of conversation you have with a 7-year-old, Jim. And I don't mean you. I mean this what we're talking about. It's a conversation we need to have with a big chunk of America, and we need to have it in such a way as to communicate with them as though they were 7-year-olds. Don't eat all the cookies now. Save some cookies for tomorrow, because no matter how good they are right now, you're going to want some tomorrow. And won't it be nice to have a cookie or two?
Well, the cookie jar is empty, or is becoming empty.
Well, the cookie jar is not only becoming empty, it has toxins leaching into it.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And they're, you know, and governments and people who are in positions of authority and power to foresee this type of oncoming need, pay no attention.
Right, because there, because there are, you know, it's the there's a reason that Aesop's fable contains the tale of the grasshopper and the ant.
Yeah, I was just thinking about that actually.
You know, David in Tennessee just wrote in as a course in the course of this conversation, Jim, and he said our usage of hydrocarbons is 2/3 plus combusted for energy. Less than 1/3 is a raw material ingredient for products. If we only stop burning the shit to make power, we give ourselves decades upon decades, if not centuries, to find other raw materials to make the stuff we want for a nice lifestyle. And it's possible to do.
Well,
but the grasshoppers don't want to do that.
Well, I hope that he's right, that only 1/3 is used for the other things that we were talking about earlier. But I do know that our modern society, since, gosh, whenever they began to develop plastics and other types of fertilizers, nitrates, and all this stuff.
Mm-hmm. The Germans.
Right, exactly. And I hope he's corrected that, but I don't know. I hope it is just 1/3. But, I mean, but will we, even if we have extensions of decades to develop something else, will we do it without some type of realization?
Well, I think Jim, that is you have just isolated the nature of the debate of our lives. It's exactly the thing that Bill McKibben is talking about at 350.org. It's the stuff that Coal River Mountain Watch is talking about. You know, it is possible to make steel with natural gas, but you still get a better high carbon steel out of coal. And of all the steel industries on the planet, U.S. steel makers, what are left of them,
well, that's the basis.
Can make steel cleaner and with less environmental impact than any other steel manufacturer in the world. And yet, again, grasshopper and ant stuff, lo and behold, that precious, precious so-called metallurgical grade coal gets on boats every day and goes to China, and goes to Russia, and goes to India.
Well, why do you think they developed the Bessemer converter?
And consequently, they make it almost certain that we can never make that cleaner, greener, if I dare say it, steel. And we do need steel.
Yeah, we do. And of course, you've got these dedicated interest, profit-driven and profit-driven only, and totally uncaring about the generations that will follow, your children, their children's children.
Yeah. I mean,
it makes this a very, very bleak world.
Chinese coal consumption. They buy almost the entire output of the Australian continent.
You know, I've been on this phone too long with you, but I'm going to say this, and I'm going to get off here. If when I say I'm going to get off, I do get off. The only thing I can think of was what was attributed to Louis the 15th, Louis Cass. The state will last by rain. After me, après moi,
le déluge. And it's frightening. It's frightening.
That note, I'm going to say goodnight, sir, and let somebody else talk. I've talked too long here.
All right. Thank you, Jim. You have a good night. Appreciate your input. Bye now. Chinese coal consumption has gone up 500% in the last decade. Something amazing happened in Guangdong province over the last couple of days. 30,000 Chinese. Now, you may have heard Kevin call in a couple of days ago talking about his experience teaching in China and about the group mentality and don't rock the boat and all of that. 30,000 Chinese under the so-called communist rule, which is actually more fascist. Under communist rule, 30,000 Chinese took to the streets to demand that a coal-fired power plant not be built right where, you know, right on top of them where they live. And the Chinese government said, okay, we won't do it. The Chinese. And that's not me talking down about Chinese people. That's me talking about what kind of courage it takes to get in the streets and do that under that kind of regime. And we got, and this is again, not damning with faint praise. Bill McKibben got how many people to surround the White House? 12,000? 14,000? It's the grasshopper and the ant, and the question is, can the ants get their act together in time to stop the complete plunder of what is left of us by the grasshoppers? And I'm not suggesting yay or nay, and I'm not trying to be negative or anything like that. But that is the question that must be pondered. How many tens of thousands of people took to the streets to protest against the coal industry in New Zealand? Was it 40, 45,000? And America sleeps. That's the kind of stuff that gives me the skin crawling freaks. Hey, welcome to the program.
Good evening, Brother Bob.
Brother Albert.
Yeah, I had to call again, Utah. I saw the headline. I had the time. And, oh, man, the car broke down today on the middle of the road.
Beautiful.
Had to walk with the girls. We're walking in the dark because, of course, it's dark at 4 o'clock here. No snow, though, so that's a good thing. but I saw what you're talking about in terms of, 2012 and let's prognosticate and the good things, maybe, we're kind of talking like that. We always have to talk about war and destruction and megadeth. That stuff gets old. Let's talk about good things. I don't know if you happen to see this little top 10 list at Think Progress, but if you guys want to have a little hope, a little silver lining for the future, I would recommend heading on over to Think Progress and looking at their top 10 clean energy stories of 2011. The first story you're going to see is the solar industry growth producing, and as the price goes down and down and cost of developed per watt, we're 2011, about $1.80 per watt, so that's a good thing. And then you look down, Google Map reveals massive geothermal potential nationwide, 10 times. 10 times our current coal capacity is what we can exploit geothermally just here in this country.
Yeah.
And, you're talking about Chinese getting up there and resisting this incessant pollution. They may be communist, but goodness gracious, they like clean air too. Well, they're not really communist. We all know that. But anyway, I think consciousness is what we're really talking about here.
Not to be Dr. Negative or anything. Consciousness is what we're talking about, Albert, but it is the absence of consciousness that we're talking about in the United States of America. Not you, not me, not the Horn family, not progressives, not liberals, decent human beings, but there is a vast swath of either unconscious by choice or unconsciously Americans where you find yourself just sort of scratching your little head and what the hell does it take to wake these people up?
I'll tell you what, Brother Bob, you just have to be the light you wish to see. I was walking down that highway there, and we're right in between the two towns I live by, and somebody pulls over with a nice truck and with a whole thing with a rig and everything and takes me into town with the girls. It's a nice lady. She's she's doing her thing, and she was a little religious, but that's all right, because if people act and walk the walk, I don't have a problem with that.
No.
If you're gonna walk the walk and I don't care. Hey, I like Jesus. Who doesn't like Jesus?
Yeah, I know.
I mean, even the most devout atheist will sit there and say, well, yeah, what Jesus said made sense, but he didn't exist, and that's fine. That's irrelevant. The whole point of the matter is are you gonna listen to the wisdom of the ages? And it was funny because I was in the store. We were talking about that, and out by the co-op near my house, there's a man. I don't even know how to describe this house. It's just a rundown shamble shack with couches on the front porch.
Sounds like home.
Yeah, it's you know, garbage cans all kicked to hell, and you know, sitting on the front lawn.
Car up on blocks, maybe.
No, they don't have enough lawn. But they're big Republicans, big, huge Republicans. And, you know, because they're right across the co-op, you know.
And they got them some family values.
Oh, boy, don't they? Go Walker. There's signs on his front lawn, Go Walker. So I just kind of, bring up Republicans. And, you know, the girls again say, Dad, what's a Republican? Now, how do I, you know, we haven't really gotten into too much history, so they don't have any, you know. They don't have any point of reference to understand where it is. I don't even know how to begin with that letter.
Yeah, it's kind of like, you know, there's what's a scab? Well, a scab is the lowest form of life that lives. Now that easy answer does not present itself, and it's really a level of negativity you don't want to put the 8-year-olds on.
Exactly, and you know, and the thing is I don't want to color them. I want them to come to their own point of view. I want them to come to my point of view, but I don't want them to come to my point of view by forced indoctrination.
Yes.
I want them to come to it because it's the one that makes sense.
There is no compulsion insanity, to paraphrase the Quran.
How dare you?
There is no compulsion in reason.
Yeah, and that's exactly what we're looking at here. I mean, goodness gracious, you know, we're looking at a planet where we are running out. I mean, just on Think Progress, they had the tar sands up there. That tar sands looks like a mountaintop removal site to me.
Yeah, it and that's exactly it. My God, if you could see a picture of, say, the strip mining in the Powder River Basin of Wyoming, why, look, that's mountaintop removal turned upside down.
Exactly. I mean, this stuff's running amok. We can't continue this. We can't continue this path. And what do we need? Well, you know what we need. You know why we get the coal to begin with. We want the electrons. Now, I'm not going to get all Nikola Tesla and this and that and all the other things that I can get into because, you know, we don't got all the time in the world. But at the same time, there's so many ways we can develop electrons. You know, how do we make those big astronomical mirrors? You know how we make them? One atom at a time with electric arc sputtering. It puts down the molecules of whatever they're trying to put down on the surface, and it's so flat. That's why they're so reflective. But we're doing it with electrons. You know, we sit here and we look at any material you want to fabricate, we can do that with electrons, just atom by atom. When they're sitting there looking at all these different, you know, new age materials, and, you know, you're talking about a couple hundred years of having, you know, the raw materials for making rubber and carbon and so on and so forth. Well, I'm going to argue that I don't think we're that far away from, you know, almost not needing these raw materials, of being able to take these, you know, isotopes and molecules and putting them together how we want to put them together. But not unless we start using what we have in terms of coal. We all know this. This is preaching to the choir here. But, you know, we need to take what we have left and ensure that we can still generate electrons when we're not using the coal and the petroleum and everything else. You know, and I think that we're going to see 2012 is going to be a massive jump in that direction for you.
And see, I think so too. I sense that in 2012 as well because of some stuff that I'm aware of, Albert. Mm-hmm. And we have to, you know, we've got to get into a reality space. Mm-hmm. And
if I may?
Yeah, please.
Remember, there was an ice lobby back before refrigeration. Oh boy, they had to worry about saws and this and that, and they had all this right and all this power because they were the only ones that had ice. And then refrigeration came up, and little kids look at the giant hooks, and they sit there in the ice box. What are you talking about? We don't know anything like that. And just like that, the paradigm shifts.
Yes.
We move from, carving out ice in the winter and storing it in ground and moving it all over the place and packing ships with it and everything else to now refrigeration. You know, and, like Mosquito Coast, you know. I mean, come on. You know, you just need the right chemicals, and you put it in the pressure, and you release the pressure, and sucks the heat out of the air, and that gives you the cold, and that's what you need. You know, and there's all kinds of things we could do with, you know, much greener. We could do things so green, and that's what we need to do. That's what.
The point where I was headed is that we've got to, you know, David in Tennessee pointing out that the reason, you know, the reason we consume, the reason that two-thirds of all the hydrocarbons go for some form of energy production, you know, gasoline in cars, home heating oil, coal burned in nasty old power plants, is because it has been made profitable under a gamed system.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Sure.
And there, and if I may extend that, Albert, if it happens that you live in a place where some skeevy-looking dude in a trench coat is selling dime bags of heroin to people who want heroin, and you walk up to him and say, "Pardon me, skeevy-looking dude, would you mind not selling heroin on my block?" Well, skeevy-looking dude will put a shiv or a bullet into you.
Mm-hmm.
But eventually, when the community becomes tired of it, they will gather together as one, and skeevy-looking dude will leave. He will go away, and he will stop doing his skeevy business in your neighborhood. Well, our neighborhood, Albert, is the planet Earth. Dear old Terra, the only home we've got. And we have a whole bunch of skeevy bastards who happen to wear bespoke suits from Savile Row, and they're in the oil business, and they're in the natural gas business, and they're in the coal business, and they convince their underlings that they're doing good things, and they run commercials that say, "We're One Oak." And, well, natural gas is going to employ 500,000 people in the next 12.5 minutes. And it doesn't matter that I'm West Virginia and I believe in coal because coal keeps lights on, pays my paycheck, and buys my old lady a bunch of new tanning bed bulbs once a year. I'm a good American. Well, you can say, you know, skeevy dude can say he's a good American till hell freezes over, Albert, but he's still a skeevy dude.
Yes, sir.
And there is nothing skeevier, I just love that word.
Yeah, skeevy is a good one.
Than the hydrocarbon industry, whether it be coal, oil, or gas.
Yes, sir.
And ultimately, whether it's 45,000 people in New Zealand, or 30,000 people in China, or 14,000 people around the White House in Washington, D.C. Those numbers must grow because our community is our planet, and we have got to drive the skeevy bastards from our midst.
Amen.
You know, if they want to go and continue to pump out hydrocarbons in the form of oil, okay, but you do it with a close eye on them to make sure that they don't screw anything up. You know, there was some good, you were talking about good news. There was some good news today.
Yes.
At least I took it as good news. One of those lo and behold moments. It turns out that the Obama Justice Department, which has become rather active lately, the Obama Justice Department is beginning to look at the first criminal charges over the BP Horizon rig. We are starting to look, and yeah, because prosecutions take time to build.
Yes, sir.
But we're looking at putting some people in jail and letting them turn big rocks into little rocks for a while over what they did to our community while they were out there in the Gulf of Mexico being skeevy. And see, they, you know, the skeevy dudes in the bespoke suits, I mean, they've got all that, but I don't think that, you know, we haven't gotten the message out as well as we should, and we haven't gotten serious enough about the message, and we haven't gotten loud enough about the message. But when we do, we will be joined in the streets in our thousands, and at that point, the skeevy dudes have to leave our communities.
Mm-hmm.
And you know better than I do that we are actually economically positioned to be better off when they leave. Even though he'll say, "Well, you know, I'm employing a lot of people running bags around here." No, we've got jobs for them. The green economy, green energy can replace, is replacing every last cotton picking one of those skeevy jobs.
By by two orders of magnitude.
Yes.
I mean, it's not even close. I mean, you know, that's one of the top clean energy stories right there. You got bioscience of 1.4 million jobs, fossil fuels with 2.4 million jobs, right? Information technology producing 4.8 million jobs, and clean economy, 2.7 million jobs.
Yeah, there are more people involved in wind energy production and solar energy production than the entirety of the filthy old skeevy coal industry.
Yes, sir. And even though they just hired, what, they just hired 40,000 new ones or something like that, I heard? Or something like that. There was a story that I had read that said something about 40,000 more coal jobs or one of those disgusting...
Yeah, but when they count coal jobs, they count as a coal job the guy who runs the... who works in the deli at the local Rippy Mart, who slices off bologna off of a big roll for bologna sandwiches for the miner at lunch. That's if you ask the coal industry, Albert, you need to understand, that's a coal job, that bologna slicing. Because if it wasn't for coal, he couldn't slice that bologna. He couldn't slice that bologna, Albert. He could not slice that bologna for a man who was working on wind turbines. Because you can't bring bologna near a wind turbine. It'll make the wind turbine just fall all to pieces because they're fragile and the technology is not ready for us in America today.
You know, that's a beautiful... That reminds me. I heard some guy made a post on some forum. Yeah, we're not ready for solar yet. Maybe in 80 years. My head exploded. My head literally just... It imploded, I would say. Implosion, yeah. No, it didn't get a mess. It just imploded. How stupid. 80 years. 80, Bob. 80. We don't have 80 years. My children don't have 80 years. My children, and I may not have lived the most luxurious lifestyle of the rich and famous in, you know, my day.
Well, they weren't looking exactly waifish when we saw them last June.
Well, thank you. Well, we definitely try to feed them.
Looked like they've been fed in the last 4 or 5 days.
That happened, so we definitely get the food down them. We have some beers to get that, but not going to have the access to just the freedom of movement if we continue down this oil paradigm. You know, the oil paradigm is over. I mean, it's... And it was really... There's no real point that we should have even went down it other than these skeezy bastards who kind of, you know, grabbed this, you know, put a finger in each nostril and jumped on our back and, you know... The more oil we bought, the less painful they made it, and now they're running out of their product, and they're really, really reeling back on our noses. We start, you know, just so we don't look at other things. You know, I mean, come on now. Bob, we've been talking solar. Man, I was talking years we've been talking solar. Haven't we? Years. You know, we sit there and you look at it now. I remember when I was talking to you, I was talking about $10,000, right? And $10,000 would take about 5 years to pay off, $200 a month, so on and so forth, right? Well, now you can get the same exact system, actually more. They can get more output in terms of kilowatt hours, and you're talking $6,000 installed. I mean, after rebates and everything else like that. So that $6,000, you pay that off even half and even more quicker. You know, and once you pay that off, next thing you know, you don't have a monthly
bill anymore.
And you know, what do you mean you can't afford it? You can't afford to not do it. Are you crazy? Since when? When has your power bill ever gone down? Oh, when you came to Network Roots Nation, I'm sure it went down a little bit because you weren't there. But when you were
my power bill here, and it's part, you know, it's part of the ongoing challenge of keeping this whole operation on the air. My power bill here has gone up 150% in 4 years. and that's because coal is our cleanest, cheapest energy source. You know, meanwhile, bless his heart, Grant in Portland, God, I love, you know, Portland. Someday, if I don't get to live there, I get to at least spend a couple of months. You know, go hang out with Susan some, go hang out in Columbia City, and go hang out with Grant, and hang out at, yeah.
Have you seen that show Portlandia?
No.
Oh, my God, put it on the list. Put it on the list, Portlandia. Oh,
it's on the list. Grant gets in touch with me and puts me in touch with another guy, and because, you know, we don't have the massive funding to put a solar array on the roof and own it. But there's this new wave coming, and lo and behold, talking to this gentleman, I find out that it is possible to long-term lease solar panels based, and then they'll put in as many panels as you need to run the whole house and get you the F off the grid. And you wind up with a power bill monthly that is equal to or less than anything you're paying for coal.
Oh, yeah, without doubt.
And so that process has begun.
Mm-hmm. That's what they were doing in Germany.
And it is, I mean, it is so inspiring for me to say that, and I hope I'm not still saying it this time next year, we set this as a goal a long time ago, and even though the wheels grind slowly, they do, as Jim notes, grind exceeding fine. Sometime in the year 2012, you talk about getting excited. Sometime in the year 2012, Albert, I'll be getting hold of John Fox, and I'll be saying, "Hey, John, we got to recut the opening." "Yeah, Bob, what do we got to put on there?" "Well, John, we're going to add a tag that says, 'No mountains were harmed in the making of this program.'" And then maybe if we're feeling all froggy, we'll say, "Hey, coal industry, suck it!" granted, you might have to turn it down so the girls don't hear it. But won't that just give you a little tingle every time you hear John Fox say, "Hey, coal industry, suck it!"
Suck it. Watch out, photons, we're coming for you.
You know, leave them poor dead forests in the ground where they was dead and buried. Digging up dead shit's kind of always been frowned upon unless there was somebody could make a dollar out of it. You know, give it 50 or 60 million years and they'll be digging us up.
I sure hope we...
Yeah, what we need here is some Bob-fired electricity.
Boy, I'll tell you, you know, that's the way to go. We all know it's the way to go. Green is the way to be. And it... You know, you make as small of an impact as we can make and leave the world a better place for our children. I don't think that that's a hippie thing to say. I don't think that that's a, you know, I mean, that just makes sense.
No, because, see, that's what my parents were focused on, and I can promise you they were not hippies.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's just human. I mean, that's the thing. That's how crazy it's become. When anyone who's, just the hippies, you know, whatever, what they, hey, I'm a hippie on my own terms. But, you know, the thing is about it, that's like the thumb on the collective consciousness. They're the ones that keep these, you know, base needs, these base requirements for human existence, you know, and so that becomes this strange thing. Organic food is strange. Free range this is strange. It's strange to you to think that the better you treat an animal, the better that animal's gonna taste when you eat it.
Yeah, there is that.
Strange? I mean, you don't.
And the funny thing is, a redneck can tell you that. A good old boy could tell you that. Because if you shoot a deer during deer season, I'm not trying to put anybody off, it's just a reality around here. If you shoot a deer during deer season, and you don't shoot well, and that deer runs for a half a mile or so, scared out of its mind, it's, by the time you chase it down and field dress it and bring it back and you do what you gotta do, you might as well not do it, because it is going to taste terrible, because it has fear and horror all through its muscle tissue. On the other hand, if you're a good shot, you shoot, and it drops, going to be some good eats.
Yeah, yes, indeed.
And again, I'm not trying to piss anybody off, but it's an image that works within the context of, yeah.
No, it's true. I mean, the better you treat something, the better, the quicker and the more humane you kill it. You know, I mean, you know, that deer is one thing, I mean, but, you know, even the animals, even the chickens, anything. I mean, it just tastes better. You know, and it's better for the planet when things are using, you know, when we're treating everything ethically. This is the lens. We need to put the ethical lens back on our headgear. You know, we don't have, you know, the ethics become, you know, that's the other thing. It becomes disproportionate with, you know, freedom. And it shouldn't be that. I mean, these are natural, common sense kind of ways to approach things. And, you know, I think more and more people are waking up to that fact. I think more and more people realize the boat we're in, you know. I mean, even this little old church lady that hooked me up with a tow and a ride today, you know, as a church lady can possibly be, but she knows that we're on spaceship Earth. She knows that we're on the only place that we can, you know, because I'm not going to stop talking about what I talk about just because, you know, hey, thank you very much, and I'll tell you a story, and we'll talk, and we'll have a little conversation, you know, and this is our only planet, isn't it? We better take care of each other and the place we live on. Yeah, certainly. I mean, you know, how can you disagree with that? What's wrong with you? Unless you're a psychopath, and then who the hell needs you? You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's the one where, you know, as Reverbo has noted, those are the people that you just pull the bus door shut on, and we're leaving now.
I mean, God, I mean, catch up. Get on the program. Nobody's trying to exclude them. But God damn, when you're sitting there talking about privatizing everything and putting price tags on everything, I mean, where has that gotten us? You know, it's like we've talked about it a billion times. You know, libertarian ideology's never been tried in the world. Do that. Oh, yeah.
No, it was the ideology that was tried until we got, what's the word I'm looking for here, civilized.
Yeah, civilized. And Liberia.
And Haiti. And Somalia.
Yeah, yeah.
And things are working out so swimmingly there.
Aren't they? Oh, yeah. You want libertarianism so much, go to Liberia. Hey, I'm a libertarian. They love Americans there. Delicious. Anyway.
Oh, with sweet taters.
Yeah, oh, we're delicious. We're sweetbreads.
you're gonna burn for that one, Albert.
What else is new?
Throw another log on.
Yeah, throw another Albert on. We'll roll him around. He'll be right.
Albert Fired Energy is some of the best heat and energy, the best return on kilowatt hours that science has ever devised.
But you see, I'd be pretty good if you just hooked up a rig to my mouth. I'll blow hot air. You know, that's a sustainable thing. You know what I mean? Make Albert sustainable energy. You could use me as energy. That's fine, but don't, you know... I don't want to be in a pod in some bleak Matrix world. I don't want to be in, you know, and you know they're remaking Blade Runner?
Is it a remake or is it a sequel?
I don't know. Who knows? But I heard they're redoing it or what have you. And the interesting thing
How? Why? Can it get bleaker? I mean, that was pretty darn bleak.
It was pretty bleak, but I think a lot of people missed it. And this new generation needs to see. See, because back
Edward James Olmos making that little origami dude out of that little unicorn out of the match. I mean, gee.
Edward James Olmos. Yeah, that was Edward James, yeah. I mean, we're sitting here looking at a world like that. Well, guess what? We're not that far from that today. You know, back in the 80s, that was plausible.
No, it's just, we're only missing the air cars, the George Jetson cars. That's it.
That I am disappointed about. But actually, they have them, technically. Did you see that?
Yes, I have seen a couple of stories. And
I don't want to see them flying around because, Jesus, people can't even drive freaking
well,
cars.
Well, because, I'm in the process of teaching a certain 16-year-old boy to drive.
Mm.
It will come to you someday, about 8 years from now.
Mm.
Albert, even though you're dealing with girls, you're going to be dealing with two of them. And it ain't much easier because you're still the guy in the passenger seat going, get off the berm!
I have to have one of them help steer because the power's... Oh, my God. We got it up.
I know. Anyway, yeah. So, but I'm in the course of teaching him to drive, and... Oh, where was I going? I'm in the course of teaching a 16-year-old to drive an automobile. I cannot conceive... And what I told him, I've done two things with him that I think were fairly profound. One was I told him about the little fuzzy thing that my dad put on the dashboard of our car when I was learning to drive. You know, little sticky feet, little sticky vinyl feet, little fluff ball, little two jiggly eyes.
Mm-hmm.
And he put a little tag on it that just said, and he said, I want you to meet Icky.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, Icky? He says, yeah, Icky stands for something. I said, what, Dad? He said, impatience can kill you. And so I've told Ferg about Icky. And the other thing I told him the other day was a statistic that I read that I found that has sort of haunted me ever since, because it's that thing that you do in freshman year of college when they say, look to your left, look to your right, one of you will not be here 3 weeks from now or something. And the statistic that I saw, Albert, said, of licensed drivers in the United States today, something between 40 and 60% could not pass a driver's test. I mean, that's a sober up. It goes hand in hand with that statistic that a friend of mine pointed out one time, that traffic fatalities, and this was, you know, 6-7 years ago, traffic fatalities in the United States, 48% of traffic fatalities are caused by drunk drivers. That means 52% of the traffic fatalities are caused by sober people. Again, stunning, chilling. And so, yeah, in conjunction with the air cars and stuff, I don't want to live in a world. I mean, I think it would be cool, and, you know, it was real Blade Runner-y and stuff. But in light of the fact that 65% of people cannot pass a driver's test, I don't want them scooting around through the air like George Jetson and Mr. Cogswell.
I concur. I mean, if it was all fly-by-wire, I'd certainly concur. But I think the level of our technology with computers, I mean, if you look at the new Jag, you know, the new Jag.
Yes, I do that. I'm guilty as charged.
Oh, my God. I'm going to have to get one just for a road trip one day if I hit the Powerball.
Yeah, well, just remember, drive it for 1 hour, work on it for three.
That's fine. I'll be like a Saudi prince. No. But it's a Jag. Oh, my Jag's in the shop. But anyway, the nice thing is that they have the tech. You know, like, those kind of cars are nice because they're platforms for the future. You know, like the Mercedes or in the CLE class or whatever they are. And, like, those kind of cars that are showing us, like, they're the first cars that had anti-lock brakes. They're the first cars that had this. They're the first cars that had that. Well, the Jag has that passive driving system that pays attention, sending little microwaves out to the traffic, and so it adjusts your cruise control for you. It doesn't drive for you. Not quite there yet. But Google has a car that drives for you. Did you see that? You got to watch that video, that poor lady going wee, 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 and the guy's sitting there. He's not hitting it with his hands on. The car's just doing like little, it looks like Herbie. Remember Herbie the Love?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Like, yep.
That's what it's like. The car, hey, go here, and it's doo-doo-doo-doo-doo, and it's driving through traffic, and it's doing fine. It's doing
good. See, that's why you've got to get your, hands on that one Richard K. Morgan book, Market Forces, because that's the cars in that world.
I think that's happening. I mean,
you know, you set it for where you're going. You get on the M1, and you take a little nap.
Yep. Or you spin the chair around and you have a family discussion. You play a game of cards. You read a book. You do this. Whatever you do.
Yeah. And in the realm of positivism, Albert, you know, this just in from David in Tennessee. David is forever gathering empirical data. And you know, because that's the best data.
Yes, sir.
David just noted, look, folks, I paid my 99 cents for a shopping bag at my local Food Lion grocery store 3 years ago. Since then, every time I plop the thing on a checkout lane, and this is in a small town in Tennessee, every time I plop the thing on a checkout lane in lieu of yet another effing polyethylene bag, I say, saving the planet, one bag at a time. In a conservative and small southern town, I have never had anything but a positive response. Yep. Groceries, liquor store, Dollar General, Mr. Patel's Quick Sack, they effing smile and affirm.
Yep.
And of course they do, because businesses, you know, they don't get the bags for free. Businesses have to pay for those. And if businesses didn't have to pay for those anymore, well, guess what? That's more goodies for them.
Yep, I've been bringing my own bags for years. And I'll tell you a real good one if you guys keep an eye out. I'll tell you this one. I'll tell you. You know, because the bags are the best thing about the bags. The only thing you got to know about the bags is don't forget them.
Yeah.
You know, don't forget them. Make sure they're either in the car or they're right by the door so you can.
Right. You bring the groceries in, you take the groceries out, you take the bag out to the car again.
Yeah, there was a time. I mean, I have plenty of those bags. I have enough bags to do many $100s worth of shopping and put it all in the bags. I mean, I have 15 of these bags.
And isn't it nice because those the nasty little polyethylene bags don't pile up? And
well, you still get them. You, because you forget. Next thing you know, you go, just, I forgot my bags. So then,
bad, Albert. Bad.
I know. But you know what? Those little bags are handy for the garbage, or they're handy to make out of yarn. And you can make other bags out of those bags. Like, you basically cut them into strips and take the strips and basically just do, like, a little knot tie. Renee knows how to do it. She does all kinds of stuff like that, all the kinds of crafty things. There's all kinds of, you can actually make a stronger bag out of the plastic bag strips than you can out of the, yeah, than the bags are themselves. They're worthless, those things. I hate them, but they are kind of useful for garbage. But anyway, but real quick, you know, those bags, they get the netted ones. They look like a net, and they expand. Man, you could put tons and tons of groceries in those things. Strong, that's definitely the way to go. Just don't forget them. And I'll tell you, at the little co-op store, I wish we were able to show you, you know, they have bags on the wall. And they put boxes, you know, so you could take boxes home, you know, like that they have for their produce. I mean, there's so many different solutions to all of our problems that are all much better than what the hell we were doing. So I have great hope for us. I mean, we just need to...
There is reason to be hopeful. And yeah. You know, I appreciate you sort of shining that light this evening because, you know, we had great news about how we're going to, you know, I think we are, we're like... $2 contributions away from being done with December and making the December nut. I mean, and that's amazing. And
that's awesome. I'll send that right to you because when I told Renee, I was like, oh, babe, you know, because I, you know, we have all the car payments. I'm like, oh,
No. You helped start the ball rolling yesterday. That's enough.
Well, no. The wife's like, well, I would have told you to give more than that. So I got yelled at for not giving enough. So.
Bless her heart.
Not to give. So yeah, we'll reach that today. No problem.
All right, Albert. You take care. Have a good evening and a happy new year if I don't talk to you before then.
Yeah, indeed.
You and all of yours and
yes,
hopefully, I don't know, lay the healing hands of faith on the automobile.
I'm going to have to do, that's all they were cars. I'm sorry, the girls are crying. Oh,
well, you know, Reverbo sent me the cartoon the other day of Gary Larson's Far Side appliance healers. Well, you know, the same guy with the DA in the back and the sweat back in the front. Yeah, he probably does cars too. So just look him up. He's there. Albert, take care, brother.
You too, brother. Be good.
Bye now. And let's see. I punched the wrong button. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to do that. I was going to try to get one more call in. But we'll do that tomorrow. And we will do that tomorrow without me saying a blessed word about fundraising. Won't that be nice? Thank you, all of you. Thank you very much for helping to keep this going. And thanks for the incredibly kind and encouraging words that come from Mike Molloy. It's just, well, it is inspiring, it is humbling, and it is thrilling all at the same time. Thanks to all of you who make this huge volunteer effort go and have done so for years on end. Thank you. Lottie in the chat room, Sparky in the chat room, our news ninjas, Gene and Susan, our blogger, Texas Betsy, Reverbo, my head writer, David in Tennessee, John Fox, who does too many things to be able to adequately list them all, and of course, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. You know, I told him the other night in a text conversation, you know what? We are going to get you on, and we are going to talk about the history of the White Rose, just so you can know what's gone into it and what it's been all about, and we will. Thank you, Ben. And thanks, of course, to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. Go there, learn about all the heroic work of Coal River Mountain Watch. And I am, in fact, I will be meeting with some of those fine people tomorrow, and I'll be back on the air. I should be home by then, no problem. But thank you to them for continuing to help keep all of this going over the years. And always, 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 Gina, Judy, it's all for you.
With America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. call River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the head-off.